ദേവം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരിഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരിധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരിധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശിശി ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശിശിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദ് നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ബുധലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനി നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണി. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധരഭവാർണവ ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷകൃഷ്ണവേവഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യദാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോയത പ്രഭോ നാമസങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപപ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം. ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരദ ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയെ മുഹ്യന്തി യത്സൂരയ തേജോവാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിതകൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാ വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തക്ഷണ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നമാം. യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം ഹനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈബാഹ്യനോ വിരഹകാതരമജ്ജുഹവാം പുത്രേതി തന്മൈതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മൈ. യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുഭയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ. കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കലവേണൂകുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാം മുരാരേ മധുരീം ന കണികാഭി കാഭി കാഭി. നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമിനി നാമിനി. നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം യാസാം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദപരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മോഹം കരോതി വാചാലം ഭംഗം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, in the 29th chapter, which we discussed yesterday, Sri Brahmarshi Sukadeva Goswami says that verse 3, Drishtva Kumudvandam Akhandamandalam Ramananabham Navakungumarunam വനം ചതൽ കോമളഗോപിരഞ്ജിതം ജഗൗകളം വാമദൃശാം മനോഹരം നിശമ്യഗീതം തന്തതനംഗവർദ്ധനം വ്രജസ്ത്രിയാ കൃഷ്ണഗൃഹീതമാനസാ ആജഗ്മോ അന്യോന്യം അലക്ഷിതോദ്യമ സ യത്ര കാന്തോ ജവലോലകുണ്ടലാഹ വി സോ ദയർ ദാറ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ സുഖദേവ ഗോസ്വാമി സേസ് ദയർ ദാറ്റ് the parabhakti stage, which is after self-realization, that what is otherwise known as also as jivan mukti state, while living within this body, liberated state, while within this body, same time liberated state of consciousness. So we were mentioned yesterday that when we go into deep sleep state, from deep sleep state, why we come back to the vacant state again? What was the reason behind it? The reason is that the vasanas that is inside us, or the impressions what we carry in our subtle body, when that is not completely wiped out, when it's not completely emptied, when the subtle body is not fully emptied, these vasanas inside, that requires an outlet. That is why we come back to the vacant state. We come back to the vacant state because vasanas have not got an outlet yet to manifest in this world, because they have got life now. Vasana means it has already got life in it. That's why it is like that. When it is a chittavritti, it is okay. It is only vritti. But when it becomes a vasana, when it gets stronger inside, that is known as vasana. And when it becomes a vasana, it has got life. Then it has to take birth. And it is because of the vasanas that we come back to the vacant state again from the deep sleep, and we continue our activity so that those vasanas can get released in the vacant state. So that we have spoken yesterday. We also saw the Sukadeva. This is all Upanishad's knowledge, all spoken through the stories. That's all it is. Sukadeva Goswami also mentions there that the gopis who were locked up inside the house, who could not go, he mentioned there, Dussaha Preshtaviraha, in the 10th verse, Tivratabha Dudha Shubha, ധ്യാന പ്രാപ്തി അച്യുതാശ്ലേഷ നിർവൃത്തിയ ക്ഷീണമംഗള. ഹി സേസ് ദർ ദാറ്റ് ദി ദാറ്റ് വൺ സൈഡ് ദ ഹാഡ് ഡീപ് ഡിസ്ട്രെസ് പ്രേഷ്ടവിരഹ സെപ്പറേഷൻ ഫ്രം കൃഷ്ണ. സെപ്പറേഷൻ ഫ്രം കൃഷ്ണ മീൻസ് വട്ട് ഡസ് ഇറ്റ് മീൻ? സെപ്പറേഷൻ ഫ്രം കൃഷ്ണ മീൻസ് separation from krishna means falling down from our spiritual position to the material consciousness. That is what separation from krishna means. Self realized state, identification with the soul, is our original position. That is our real state. But when we have fallen down into the bodily identity, dussaha preshta viraha tivrata badutha shubhaha, due to that extreme misery they were experiencing from that separation from Krishna. In the bhakti language you will say separation from Krishna. In jnani's language you will say separation from the soul. That's only the difference is there. Tivrata patutha shubha dhyana prapta achyutashlesha nirvrutya kshena mangalaha. That on the other hand, because they have completely separated from Krishna, that separation created so much distress in them that all their papa vasana inside, or due to their whatever that was left behind in their subtle body, that got wiped out. And dhyana prapta achyuta ashlesha nirvrutya kshena mangala, inside their heart they embrace Krishna, and in that happiness all their pious activities also got released. This was the same thing what we say, that our vasanas, when we go into deep sleep state, when we wake up, those vasanas brings back life into us. But because unlike the gopis, gopis had the good fortune that due to their association with Krishna, their connection with the material world was completely finished. There is no more material life for them. That was over. Whereas in our case, because it is completely filled up with material vasanas, material impressions inside, we come back to the vacant state and continue with our activities in this world. So, tamiva paramatmanam jarabuddhyami sangadaha jahurgunamayam deham sadya prakshina bandanaha. These are all Upanishads. Upanishads spoken in the rasa dance. That's all. Shukra Brahmarshi brings the jahurgunamayam deham. The modes of three modes of material nature is this gross body. Jahur Gunamayam Deham. Deham, this material body, is the three modes of material nature. And they have left that Sadya Prakshina Bandhanaha. That they also have lost their connection with the Prakshina Bandhanaha. They're also connected in the subtle body. They were also feeling that all bondage, what we have experienced. Why? Because Punyavasana or the pious act, results of their pious activities, those vasanas have gone. And the equally, due to their distress, what they have experienced in separation from Krishna, they also lost their sinful vasanas, what was there present inside. So those things. So here, these things are important in the sense that when one reaches the state of liberation, how we have to understand that? That is the topic that is discussed there. So as Krishna mentions before, that parabhakti state, which is experienced after self-realization, and that is in another, in the jnani's language, it is called as jivanmukti. Jivanmukti is the same state. Jivanmukti means liberated state while living within this body. So, in the devotee's language, that parabhakti is the one what gopis are experiencing at the moment. They are experiencing that parabhakti state. Now here, what is interesting here is that, so, self-realization gives you an immediate relief. Self-realization gives you an immediate relief that you are freed from the upadhis. That is the first thing. You get a freedom from the upadhi. That is the first step. What does that mean? Body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, none of them will bother you anymore at that position. You come to a point where body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, these things have no control over you. You have their control is lost. That is what is called upadhi dosham. Upadhi dosham. So, but even though your freedom from the upadhi has come, swarupa rati, that means happiness in that, the bliss of the soul is still not experienced. There is a place in between that. You have freedom from the upadhi has happened. That means freedom from the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, all that has happened. But Swarupradi, Swarupradi means that the bliss that comes from the self-realization hasn't happened yet. Because what happens is at that stage that this Pratyabhijna, Bhagavatam call it as Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means it knows its Swarupam, that means it knows its identity. And it will, after that state of realization that his identity, it leaves some marks in our intelligence, and it will remain in there of that experience of self-realized state. Experience of the self-realized state. That means that body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything has lost its grip on us. That means that influence is not there anymore. And at the same time, Swarupa Rati, Rati is the word used in the Bhagavatam in many places also. Uddhava also says to Krishna, Namostu de Mahayogin Prapannamanushadhimam Yathatvacharanam Bhoje Ratisyal Anapayini. Rati means continuous experience of that bliss, continuous experience of the blissful nature of the soul. That is that Rati. In the devotee's language, it is mentioned as Prapanna Anushadhimam Yathatvacharanam Bhoje Ratisyal Anabhayini. In the end of Ekadasha Skandam, you will see this verse. Namostude Mahayogin. Uddhava says to Krishna, O Mahayogi, Namostude, pay my obeisances to you. Prapanna Manushadhimam. I am completely surrendered unto you. Why? Yathatvacharanam Bhoje. I need that bhakti. That what kind of bhakti? Ratisyal Anabhayini. Rati. Rati means that continuous, uninterrupted experience of the soul in Jnani's language, or uninterrupted experience of Krishna in devotee's language. There's only two differences. Spoken in two different ways, that's all. For the devotee, it is mentioned as Krishna. For the Jnani, it is mentioned as the soul. There is not practically any difference. It's one and the same thing to experience in two different names under two titles, that's all. So, Radhisyalanabhayini, that's what the devotee's position is. So, that Rati won't happen even if you have got the freedom from the body, mind, intelligence and ego and the senses. That is why. But there will be the Pratyabhijna, or the first realization that I am not this body, that will leave some impressions in our intelligence and it will go. It will go. So, but because there is prarabdham still, karmam is not over. From the karmam is not completely finished yet. This prarabdham, this you have to remember, that even if you are liberated, prarabdha karmam you have to experience through. There is no other way. It is extremely rare cases Krishna takes away prarabdham. That means whatever karmam that has become manifested in the form of this body, this body, even though you may get liberated inside this body, till the prarabdham is over, you got to stay in this body. You have to stay in this body. Prarabdha karmam is not normally wiped out. That is the Bhagavata Siddhantam is like that. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see that in many places. Jadabharata had to stay in the deer body. Is it not? He could not, he knew what he was before. He was Emperor Bharata and in the deer body. And he says there, you can read that in the Bhagavatam, he mentions there that my prarabdham was not finished, so I had to stay in the deer body for a certain period of time. And at particular time, when the prarabdham was over, I gave up my body, he says there. Prarabdha karmam is finished. So, prarabdham, even if it is jadabharata, it's not taken out. He has to go through it. That is the principle. That's why this body, it is better not to complain about it or try to fix it too much or to get it going. It is not going to go. It will go its own way at its own time. That's why it's called prarabdham. So, prarabdha karmam, when that is finished, when the body is freed from that, then automatically that body is over, then you don't have to worry about this body anymore. When the next body, whether that will happen or not, that is the main question. Another body will come back to us or not. So here, that he mentions here that those devotees who have got freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, intelligence, ego and the senses, you will see them in this world who have realized that far, but they have not reached the experience of the blissful nature of the soul yet. You will see people like that in this world, who are in that state still. So, but Bhakti, Krishna is talking about that in that Swarupam, in one's own identity, how one engages and experiences that blissfulness of the soul, that is, Krishna calls it as Bhakti, Parabhakti. That is the Parabhakti state. So, you can also notice the same thing with Sri Narada Maharshi. Narada Maharshi, when he was a young boy, he has first time experienced Krishna, and Krishna gave him the darshanam and spoke to him and told him, you have to live in this body till the prarabdham is finished. And Narada Muni had to wait. He had no choice. Aradha karmana rovanam nipatal panchabhautika, he says. That till this material body made of 5 material elements, till it drops away, he has to wait. He has no choice. Krishna mentions that in the Ekadasham also. Prarabdham one has to go through. One cannot free oneself from that. So, that realized truth, what one has realized, absorbing in that and engaging in that and experiencing that blissful nature of the soul, that is not, that is what is called as bhakti. You see how Krishna calls that as bhakti. Bhakti is not what we do in this world. Bhakti is in that state of liberated state when one experiences the happy or blissful nature of the soul and be absorbed in it all the time, in the blissfulness of the nature of the soul, that is called as bhakti. So, if you look into the fifth canto, of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sixth chapter, these are important verses because in there, now and then, when Sukadeva Goswami gets an opportunity to talk about the truth, he will present it in a way, on appropriate place in the Bhagavatam. He got a similar situation here in the Bhagavatam. So what did he do? You will see in the 6th chapter, 18th verse. Rishabhadev gave up his body. That is where he mentions this. He says there in the last verse of the 6th chapter, in the 5th canto, Nityana, last but one, 18th one, verse 18. Rajan padir guralam bhavatam yadunam devam priya kulapadi kocha kingara ovam astueva manga bhagavan bhajadam mukundo muktim dadadi karhijal smana bhakti yogam. He says, what is bhakti yogam? Rajan padir guralam bhavatam yadunam devam priya kulabadi koja kingarova astueva manga bhagavan bhajadam mukundo muktim dadadi karhijal smana bhakti yogam. This question came up because you can see when Maharaj Rishabhadev gave up his body, so Maharaj Rishabhadev gave up his body, and at that point he says here that he gave up his body, and Parikshit Maharaj started thinking that Rishabhadev gave up his body and I am still here. What is going to happen to me? So seeing that anxiety in the face of Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami sensed that, and that is why he spoke that verse there. He understood the anxiety in Parikshit's face. So you will see in that verse, my dear king, he says, that after all, he says, Krishna has come to you and the Pandavas as your advisor, protector, and also your friend, controller in everything. Not only that, he is also engaged as your representative for all practical purposes. He is also functioning as your representative everywhere. And Krishna hands over, he says, Krishna hands over liberation to everybody who approaches him. But bhakti, he never gives it so freely. That is what that means. Muktim dadadi karhi jilsma na bhakti yogam. Muktim dadadi karhi jilsma na bhakti yogam. You will see the last line. Astveva manga bhagavan bhajana mukundo. Muktim dadahi karhi jilsma na bhakti yogam. Mukti is given, but bhakti is not given so easily. He puts it like that. But if you read that, you may get a misunderstanding that, oh, mukti is really available, on bhakti is very, very difficult. The fact is this, mukti is also not a given thing. That's also there. But if you speak in the vachyartham, they call it, that means when you express it, it's spoken like that. Mukti is not something to be given. Mukti is already there in us. That is our swarupam. Our swarupam is mukti. Nature is liberated state, isn't it? Krishna says that later on. Bandho mukta idivyakya gunadomena vastuda. Gunasya maya mulatval name mokshona bandhanam. So our pure state is that we are always liberated. But ajnanam is inside. That has not gone. That is the problem. So what he did, after he mentions that, immediately in the next verse, in the last verse of that chapter, he mentions Nityana Bhuda Nijalava Nivakta Trishna Shreyasiradrajanaya Chirasutta Buddhe Logasaya Karnaya Bhayam Alpa Logam Akhyanamo Bhagavade Krishabhaya Tasmai. He mentions there that in order to talk about that bhakti, he does not want to make it issue. In other words, he does not want people to misunderstand bhakti. So straight away, immediately in the next verse, he says, Nityani Rupa Nijalabha Nivurta Trishna. That because of the Surubhanandam, experiencing the one's own spiritual identity, that is called Surubhanandam. Surubhanandam means experiencing the blissful nature of one's own soul, spiritual identity. Then, not only that, Nityanandam, Nityani Bhudam, then Nijalabha Nivurta Trishna, freedom from all desires he has. He has complete freedom from all desires. And such a person, Shreyasya Dandrajanaya Chirasupta Buddhim, because of the identification with the body, this world which is absorbed in the body all the time, not only that, due to the thoughts of this body and not knowing what is its ultimate goal, not knowing what its ultimate goal, and thinking like that, this world, he says, is absorbed in the body. Not knowing its ultimate goal, this world, which means all of us, this world is absorbed in the body. He says there, Shraya Siddhadra Jaya Chira Supta Buddhehe. Supta Buddhi means that sleeping nature. What is sleeping mean? Sleeping does not mean sleeping, deep sleep state. What he says sleep means here, Supta Buddhi means that our indifference to self-realization, or in other words, our indifferent attitude in knowing the truth. We are showing indifference to that, isn't it? That being, because we think the world is real, we are real, body is real, mind is real, everything is real for us here. And when that ignorance goes away from us, world is not real, body is not real, mind is not real, soul is real, that is the proper buddhi. But supta buddhi means that sleepy state where we are in a kind of intoxicated state. We are not fully conscious of our identity. And Krishna says here, Shreyasya Dadrajaya, for their benefit, Logasaya Karunaya, Abhayam Alpa Logam, that for their benefit and to give them some shelter, Akhyanamo Bhagavade Vishabhaya Tasmai. This story of Rishabhadev was spoken, he mentions there. So there also, in the 18th verse, he talked about the Muktim Dadaya Karhijal Svana Bhakti Yogam. Bhakti Yogam, Bhakti is not given easily, but Mukti is given. But straight away he mentions there that this world, who is completely under the control of the modes of material nature, and which actually, when under the three modes, means you have no desire for self-realization, no desire for self-realization. So that is why he mentions there like that. Then Shreyasa Chira Supta Buddhe, Supta Buddhi, that sleeping nature. So in this verse, you can see here that mukti is not something given. Mukti is not something given. Dadadi spoken there, the word dadadi, dadadi is used there, but actually mukti is not something to be given. Nobody hands over mukti to you. Mukti is already we have got. But mukti means, only thing is, what you have to understand, mukti does not mean that we travel to another planet or live there, Vaikuntham or Kailasam or Golokam, whatever it is. That is not mukti according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, nowhere it is spoken about mukti in that way. How is mukti spoken? If you look into the second canto, it will tell you what is mukti in the 10th chapter, verse 6. In the 10th chapter, verse 6. The last chapter, I think, in the second canto. Shukabrahmarshi, Sukadeva Goswami, when he started his explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit, initially he wanted to clear certain misunderstanding from him. You will see all that in the second canto. Two kinds of liberation is discussed in the Bhagavatam. One is known as Krama Mukti, other one is called Sadhya Mukti. Krama Mukti means a devotee by practicing Krishna consciousness or through yoga process or through Jnana Margam. Either way, he goes into the higher planets, eventually he goes to Brahma's planet and stays with Brahma. When Brahma goes back to the spiritual world, he also goes along with him. He doesn't come back here. That is called gradual liberation or Krama Mukti. Krama Mukti means gradual liberation. In the second canto, you will see this discussed. Then there is instantaneous liberation, not going through all the other planets, directly from here to the spiritual world. To the spiritual world. But although Krama Mukti and Sadhya Mukti was spoken there, Shiva Brahmarshi says there that let me explain this nature of Mukti, what it means. That is what that sixth verse saying in the 10th chapter. Nirodhasya anushayanam atmanah sah shakti bhi muktir hi tanyatha rupam swarupenam vyavasthiti. Nirodhasya anushayanam atmanah sah shakti bhi muktir hi tanyatha rupam swarupenam vyavasthiti. So nirodham is a word they have used there. When we go back to Brahmam, and we dissolve ourselves with all our upadhis. Upadhis means, because at the end of devastation, that will happen. When the partial devastation happens, we, with our subtle body, goes and dissolves this Brahmam. Then we come back again from there. When the night time of Brahma is over, we have to come back here. And we'll bring our subtle body with all our vasanas with it back to this world. But this state here mentions that Atmana Saha Shakti Bhi Mukti Hit Anyadha Rubam Swarupena Vyavasthiti. Mukti, he says there, Mukti means Anyadha Rubam Tektvena Swarupena Vyavasthiti. In other words, identification with the body or with all other designations here. This is all our Anyadharuvam. Anyadharuvam means all other things what we have identified with. If we get released from the identification with the body and being situated on the Swarupam, in our pure identity, he defines that here as Mukti. Mukti is defined like that. So this is the only place where you see the definition of Mukti in the Bhagavatam. Muktirhi tanyadharyupam swarupena vyavasthiti. So in that definition, what he has spoken there, he says there, that mukti's symptom is like that, that all to leave behind everything what we are not. That means we are not this body, we are not this mind, we are not this intelligence, we are not this ego, we are not the senses, all of that, and to be situated like that, that is called mukti. That is called mukti. So neither brain, neither intelligence, nor mind, nor ego. So if you wipe them all out, if you get rid of them, all these things, of course you can't do it physically, it has to leave us. It has to leave us and go. What remains then after that? Pure consciousness, isn't it? Pure consciousness remains. And that is what we are experiencing in the form of awareness inside, as the soul, consciousness, I am, I am, I am. That consciousness, awareness of ourselves all the time, that is called avabhodham. It's another word used is avabhodham. It is in that consciousness that the mind, body, senses, all of them continue there. They tend to exist in that. We only, if we have the consciousness, only in the consciousness body can stay, mind can stay, intelligence can stay, ego can stay. If there is no consciousness, none of them can stay, isn't it? Body cannot stay if there is no consciousness, mind cannot stay if there is no consciousness, intelligence also, and same thing with ego. So they all exist in consciousness, is it not? In consciousness they exist. If consciousness is not there, they don't exist either. So that's the important point. So, and whatever that is happening in the body, in the mind, in the intelligence, and even the experience of this world is all happening within that consciousness, within the consciousness. But only thing is, we are not conscious of that, that it is in the consciousness all this is happening. We are not conscious of that. So, it is only in that consciousness I am speaking. It's only in the consciousness you are listening. Consciousness is speaking and consciousness is listening. That is the main thing. If there is no consciousness, even if I have this body, mind, intelligence, I can't speak. Similarly, even if you have the body, mind, intelligence, if there is no consciousness, you can't hear. Isn't it? So behind all this, the body, mind, intelligence and everything, it is the consciousness that is actually doing the job. It is due to the presence of the consciousness I am speaking, and due to consciousness you are hearing also from that. So only thing is, we don't give attention to that consciousness. As long as the person who is speaking, if all his attention is in what he is speaking, and if the person who is listening, if all his attention is in what he is listening, then till then we will not give attention to the person who is speaking or the person who is listening. Yeah, there are two different things. I am speaking, but if all my attention is on what I am speaking, rejecting or ignoring the person who is speaking, and similarly you are giving all your attention to what you are hearing, ignoring who is hearing, it's a different situation altogether, isn't it? So when the person who is hearing or when the person who is speaking, if he starts giving attention to the from where, who is speaking, or the person who is listening, who is listening, then that is a samadhi state. That's a samadhi state. These are subtle things in the Upanishads and the Bhagavadam. Shukabrahmarshi is speaking from his own realizations, all these things, isn't it? Because you have to remember that for him what matters, not the body, not the mind, not the intelligence, not the ego. Sudeva Goswami, what matters is that consciousness, avabhodam. That is his concern. He is trying to get that across to us, that only due to the presence of that consciousness you are hearing, only due to the presence of consciousness I am speaking. But if your attention somehow moves away from the what you have heard to person who is hearing, it is saying in another way, self-realization, realizing the
self. Where it is all happening, that's more important. What's important is, where is all this happening? It's all happening in the consciousness, is it not? And we saw, without the consciousness, body, mind, intelligence, ego, they cannot operate. They cannot operate. So, it's, as I mentions here, that speaker, if he talks about the person who is speaking, if his attention falls on the person who is speaking, then that is a samadhi state. Sukadeva Goswami spoke everything from that state. In that samadhi state he spoke, because he is fully conscious where everything is coming from. Where everything is coming from. It comes through the mouth in the form of words, but inside Sukadeva Goswami, attention is always on the soul. Always on the soul. That is in the jnani's language. In the devotee's language, attention is always on Krishna. That's all it is. You will see here in the that there is a statement in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter. If you look into verse 39 in the 4th chapter, Krishna mentions there, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. He says there, isn't it? Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. In the 4th chapter, verse 39. Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. Talpara samyadendriya jnanam ladhva param shandim achirena digachadi. There, Krishna is saying, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. So in other words, Shraddha, a faithful man, who is absorbed in transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses, quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. He says, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam, that tatpara samyadendriya jnanam labdhva param shandim achirenadi gachadi. You see there? So, there that word Shraddha, very important. Why? Because Shraddha comes from the soul. Shraddha comes from the soul. We have to remember that. Shraddha comes from the soul. So you can see the problem there. The translation, it says faithful. Faith comes from the mind. Shraddha comes from the soul. Everywhere this is the same problem, isn't it? We don't know where it's coming from. most of the people think everything comes from the mind, isn't it? So, Shraddha actually comes from the soul. It doesn't come from the mind. That's why they are saying, Sukadeva Maharshi is saying here, when you are hearing, if the Shraddha is there, if you are fortunate enough to have that Shraddha, your attention will go from what you are hearing to the person who you are hearing. Similarly, the speaker will speak and not give attention to what he is speaking, rather his attention will be from where the source, from where it's coming. That is Shraddha. So Shraddha actually comes from the soul. And faith is a word in English which is difficult to translate completely as Shraddha. Shraddha is a lot more than that. Because if you look in Viveka Chudamani, definition of Shraddha itself is that Shastrasya Guru Vakyasya Satya Buddhyava Dharana Sa Shraddha. That is how it says there. It doesn't say faith. Faith is not the word that is used there. Faith, we will say Hindu faith, Islamic faith, Christian faith. So many faiths in this world, isn't it? Faith will come and go. Today you can have faith in something. Tomorrow you can have faith in something else, is it not? Faith is not permanent. Although we sign yours faithfully. That's all it is. So, that doesn't mean anything actually. I mean, it's okay in a mundane level. That faith, you can also say your faith in certain religious process, you can have faith. That's okay. You can have a faith in a particular religious process. Therefore, we say Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Jewish, all that is based on that faith business. Faith. Interfaith, multi-faith, all kinds of things they say. Isn't it? That's okay. In that level, it's fine. But when you come to Srimad Bhagavatam, and we talk about Shraddha, Krishna's words are very clear. He has not mixed words. He is saying there, Shraddhavan labhade jnanam. Knowledge of the soul is only possible when it comes, and the soul gives you that. that shraddha. When the soul gives you that, talpara samyadendriyam. And what is that shraddha? We again talked about it before. Between two thoughts, in between comes. That is shraddha. That is coming from the soul. In between two thought waves, between two chittavritti, that what is known as in Shastram, the word used is spurti. Spurti means that one suddenly pops up. You are going through one thought wave, suddenly it breaks and another thought wave comes. Who breaks it? That's called spurti. Between two thought waves, you are thinking about something and suddenly that disappears, another thought comes in. Who has done this? Why did that shift from one thought to another thought? That is called spurti and that is called shraddha. That is coming from the soul. That's coming from the soul. Only personalities like Shiva Brahmarshi, who have gone to extreme subtle level, who understand the soul, can speak with authority all these things. And all what he is trying to tell us is those things in the Bhagavadam, but through the process of katha, katha kathanam. That is what it is. So he mentions here that as much as shraddha, in order to get the shraddha out from the soul, is sadhana. Sadhana is for that purpose. That somehow or the other shraddha develops inside. Shraddha comes from the soul. So, tapasa shraddha, Upanishad says. From tapas, austerities, shraddha will come. So, shraddha will come. And tapasya, that will wake up shraddha in a person. In due course of time, he will start thinking about his own identity. You know, it is not easy to get people to get absorbed in the soul. It is very easy to get absorbed in the body, isn't it? Doesn't require much of a training. If you tell people, oh, you look beautiful, that's enough. Or you say, you dress up nicely, or something like that. If people dress up and to see, because attraction to the body is so strong in everybody. And that's why all gyms are full, all the places where people go to get their body. So attraction to the body is not difficult. But attraction to the soul for anyone is very difficult because it's very abstract, isn't it? We don't know what it is and does it exist? We also question that either, isn't it? So this kind of problems. So that is why I mentioned here, tapasa shraddha. Unless shraddha comes, it won't happen. And shastram, Guru's words, Shastram, the conclusions of the Shastram, Shastrasya Guruvakyasya, Satya Vidhyavadharana, that you know that is the only truth. That absolute acceptance of that truth of the Shastram is called Shraddha. Shastrasya Guruvakyasya, Satya Vidhyavadharana, Sa Shraddha. That is how it is defined. Shraddha is defined like that. That because Shastri conclusion is perfect, our conclusion is not perfect. So therefore, only at that time we will start inquiring about ourselves. Only when that shraddha comes up in a person, only then he will start inquiring about himself. Then he will start asking the question, why am I working so hard in this world? Why am I running around all over the world? And he will also notice, I am getting attached to so many things in this world. And what is the secret behind it, that I am finding attracted by so many things in this world? And and also that attraction sometimes, which is also addressed as priyam, isn't it? Priyam, when I have that priyam inside, which also comes from the soul, I am feeling happiness within me. All these questions only one will ask when he has shraddha. Shraddha is the key behind it. You will see in Chandogya Upanishad, Sri Narada Maharshi has a discussion there with the Kumaras about Shraddha. How Shraddha develops in a person. And when in the ancient times, when the boys were taken to the Gurukulam for teaching Shastram, the spiritual master will measure that person's Shraddha first. How much Shraddha has come up in him. He will not ask you for any birth certificate and documents. That's not what he will ask you. What he will look at you and he will know how much Shraddha you have. That means in the first 5 or 6 years time in life, how you are spiritually nurtured or spiritually enlightened. In other words, how much spirituality you have acquired, which means that Shraddha has developed inside. Nachiketas, you remember in Kathopanishad, he had the highest Shraddha, it says in the Upanishad. Why? As soon as Nachiketas got an opportunity, he wanted to find out about death. Why death happens to a person. And he won't be satisfied by anything. He was offered everything in this planet. You can have horses, elephants, beautiful women, you can have all the palaces, all comforts in this world. Nachiketas says no. There, in Kathopanishad says, Nachiketas had the highest Shraddha. Shraddha in him. Why? Shraddha is coming from the soul. In that degree, it is flowing from inside. So, to develop this Shraddha, tapas is required automatically. That is what is happening here. So, these questions, he will start asking these questions. Why am I suffering? Why am I working so hard? Why am I running around in this world? What is the gain ultimately from all these things? And why I get attracted to so many objects in this world? I feel happy about it. And who is actually experiencing this happiness? These kind of questions in a deeper level will come from that person, one who has got Shraddha. One has got Shraddha. So, not only that, Shraddha also creates another situation. He becomes so good in reflection that he knows that the answer is not going to come from outside. It has to come from within. This is another aspect of that. When these thoughts come up in a person in this way, he also knows that the answer he is looking for is not going to come from outside. He is very much aware of that, and he will be absorbed in that subtle level trying to find the answer for all that. All this is a result of Shraddha. And till the Shraddha, in order that the Shraddha to develop, that is why tapasya is mentioned. And that is also the purpose of satsangam, is also to create the Shraddha in a person, to Shraddha in a person. In one satsangam or a spiritual master, he cannot hold your hand and take you to the goal. That's not possible. He cannot hold you the hand and take you to the goal. Nobody can do that. Because in order to develop the Shraddha inside, the instructions from the spiritual master, instructions from the Shastram, and what you hear in the Satsangam, they all can help you to develop that Shraddha. That's all it can do. No spiritual master, no Satsangam, no guru can hold you by hand and take you to the truth directly. That's not possible. Remember yesterday we talked about that. That it is ultimately in an individual's hands what he has to do in spiritual life. It is, that is why he mentions there, ajagmu anyonyam alakshito dhyamaha. That every gopi, she had to make her own way through in spiritual life. Nobody is going to come and tell her to do this next thing. Every moment, we like it like that, isn't it? Every day told what the next thing I should do. That's where we are. So that's our nature. Ajagmo anyonyam alakshito dhyamaha. Because gopis had developed such a Shraddha inside, they did not need any more instructions. A Shraddha will dictate to them what they should do in the next stage. So, Krishna says here, that all Guru, Shastram, Satsangam, everything is for, in order to activate the Shraddha inside a person. That's the purpose behind it. In order to activate that Shraddha inside. So, once that Shraddha wakes up, then he will see the Vastu inside himself. He will see that Vastu. From where Shraddha is coming, he will notice that. Krishna says that in the Bhagavadam. If you look into the Bhagavadam, you will see there is a verse in the 11th canto, somewhere, yatha yadalpa parimrjyate sau malpunya gatha shravana bhidhanehi tatha tatha pasyadi vastu sushmam chakshuddivai anjana samprayoktam. That's a famous verse in the Bhagavadam. Krishna is saying that yatha yadalpa parimrjyate sau, that malpunya gatha shravana bhidhanehi, that if you keep on hearing what Krishna, about Krishna, Krishna's activities, Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen? യഥാ യഥാൽപാ പരിമൃജ്യതേ സൗ മൽ പുണ്യഗാഥാ ശ്രവണാഭിധാനേഹി. ഇഫ് യു കണ്ടിന്യൂസ്ലി ഹിയർ ദാറ്റ് കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് തഥാ തഥാ പശ്യതി വസ്തു സൂക്ഷ്മം, ദാറ്റ് സൂക്ഷ്മ വസ്തു ഇൻസൈഡ് അസ് which is present there as awareness, consciousness in other words. Awareness, avabhodam, consciousness, all these are reference nomenclature for the same object inside. Tatha tatha pashyati, you will start seeing that vastu sushmam, that very extremely subtle vastu inside. That is what Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavadam. So it is that shraddha that turns our attention from the world, from outside to inside, and all these questions starts coming up inside, and that wakes up tapasya. Tapasya comes from that. Austerities, in other words, austerities, penances, sadhana, that is all tapasya. It's all one category. One category. And from that tapasya, this inquiry will begin inside. This inquiry will begin inside. So, chakshuddhivai anjana samprayuktam. So, when Krishna's mercy, Krishna's kripa falls on a jiva like that, it is at that time the shraddha wakes up. The shraddha wakes up inside. And just they mentions like this, that some very big treasure is underneath the ground. We don't know where it is. We don't know where it is. So in the olden days, apparently they had a system. You know, before, in the past, many years ago, this banking system didn't exist. What people used to do, they used to, wealth, they used to keep it underneath the ground. They know where they have kept the wealth, the treasure. It's like gold, jewelry, and things like that. They'll put in a box and dig the earth, and they'll put it underneath that. They didn't have the sophisticated system like today. In fact, they were safer than today, I suppose, than the banks today. Banks today, you're just helpless when it goes bust. You just have to stand there, Northern Rock. So similar, but they had different style of banking in that way. They looked after their wealth in that way. So they will keep their assets, I mean, like the valuable things like that, underneath the ground. They'll dig a hole and cover it up with something and keep it like that. So they had a system that a certain kind of ointment, if they apply in the eyes, they can find out where they have left it before. It was a kind of treasure hunt you could do with that. So so that particular ointment, these were all old technology. With that old technology system, they had the ointment in order to find that they will go to many mountains and mountains and also many different places. Ultimately, what they will do is that Patanjali says that in the Yoga Sutra, he says, seeing the whole body, it says that that once that is applied into the eyes, he says, then he can see things which are underneath the ground. That is what he mentions here. Tatha tada pasyadi vastu sushmam. Similarly, when the shraddha has developed in a person, he will also start sensing within that there is another vastu there who is continuously managing everything, who is continuously running this whole body. So and that is the very way it operates. It is only an example given here to tell us that how it works. Just like the treasure underneath is seen by applying that ointment in the eye, they can sense where it is hidden, Similarly, those who have got Shraddha, they will start seeing that that Jiva, living entity, he will start experiencing that bodham or awareness of one's own swarupam inside, and he will start giving attention to that. Most of the people find it very difficult to give attention to the soul, isn't it? It is like that. Most of us have the attachment to the body so strong and our ignorance also so deep that attention to the soul is a difficult thing. But when that happens, what happens is that attention to the body goes away. When the attention to the soul builds up, attention to the body naturally goes away. So, and that Shraddha, when it becomes very intense on the soul, when Shraddha becomes very intense on the soul, and even for a moment you cannot take your attention away from the soul, if that happens, then you will have proper realization of the truth. That is called Tattvajnanam. Tattvajnanam means that the attention from the body has gone due to the falling of attention on the soul. In the Bhagavad Gita, you know how Krishna puts it? Krishna says, I think it is in the third or fourth chapter, he mentions there, Param drishtva nivartade. That is what that is. Forget the beginning. Param drishtva nivartade is the last line in that verse. So, Param drishtva nivartade means that he has started, his Shraddha has gone away from the world, everything, and due to the strong Shraddha inside, Shraddha has become so strong inside that it has fallen on the soul. Shraddha, attention has fallen on the soul. And due to that, attention to the body has gone. Due to that, attention to the body has gone. So, even for a smaller period of time, if you give attention to that, you will know what the reality is. What the reality is. In other words, it is an experience of the truth at that point. That is the beauty of the soul. When you experience that reality of the soul, even for a short period of time, because it is the truth, because that is the reality, even a very short period of time, experience of the truth, if the Shraddha falls on that, you will see a great happiness from that. But even though it is like that, Rati won't be there. Rati may not happen there. You see, in the third chapter, there is a verse, 17th verse. If you look, you will see. Yes, Atma Rati Revasya, Atma Truptascha Manava, Atmanyav Atmanatushta, Tasya Karyam Na Vidyade. That is a beautiful verse, very often quoted. Yes, Atma Rati Revasya, Atma Truptascha Manava. Is it not? 17?
Yes.
Yeah. So, so you see the subtlety of Bhagavad Gita, the very beauty of Bhagavad Gita is in all these things. That the more we understand Bhagavad Gita and the subtlety of Bhagavad Gita, you can appreciate Bhagavadam better. Can appreciate Bhagavadam better. So here he says that in the 17th verse, Yastva Alpa Radire Vasyal Alpa Truptascha Manavam Alpanyeva Evajasam Tushta Tasya Karyam Navidyade. Let's read the translation. Krishna says that one who is, however, taking pleasure in the self, who is illumined in the self, who rejoices in the self and is satisfied with the self, only fully satiated, for him there is no duty. There is no duty. Now, even there, the problem is, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no reference to duty anywhere. This word duty, duty, as in the translation as it has come now, let's see then, what, tasya karyam na vidyade, that's how it is mentioned. Karyam and duty, there's a little difference. In the sense that duty is something that you have accepted as your responsibility and you are doing it. But in karyam, tasya karyam na vidyade, he has nothing to function in this world. Karyam is like that. He has no function for him to do. There is no function, there is nothing to be done in this world. That's a karyam nidhide. Karyam generally is referred like that. Suppose I have nothing to do, I have no business there, you say like that, isn't it? You say, I don't have any business there, so I'm not going there. Similarly, that's a karyam nidhide. I have no karyam, I have no business there. So, anyway, translations, all these problems comes. There's nothing we can do. So, Krishna is saying there. So only when that happens, this rasam, what we are talking about was Krishna's rasa dance, isn't it? The rasam becomes a complete experience in that state only. When Atmaridirevasya, Atmatruttashamanava, Atmanyevaya Santushta, Tasya Karyam Navidyade. See that all that is a requirement for experiencing rasam. Rasa dance we are discussing. Rasa dance background is all this. Atmaridirevasya, that means Rati should be there in the self. He should be having Rati in the self. Atmatruptaschamanava, totally satisfied with, who rejoices, taking pleasure in the self. You can see how the translation makes it difficult to get the message through properly. Rati is translated here as pleasure. Pleasure and Rati is big difference. Pleasure normally when you refer to in this world, oh, it's really pleasant, we say. Mostly it is referred to the senses, through the senses. Rati is not through the senses. Again, there is a problem. Yastu Atmaradi Revasya Atma Truptascha Manava Atmanyevaja Santushta Tasya Karyam Na Vidyade. So, what happens when we start mixing the terminology from the mundane world into the spiritual terminology, it can also change your perception of the thing. You won't get the right understanding of the thing. Is it not? That is why as much as possible, if you use the same words in the Bhagavad Gita, it makes a lot more precise in our understanding. Atmarati means Uddhava is praying to Krishna to give Rati. Is it not? He says, Namostude Mahayogin Prapanna Manishadhimam Yadha Tva Charanamboje Rati Siyal Anavayini, he says. Now, that naturally Uddhava is not asking for pleasure from Krishna. It cannot be. And so here, Atmaradi Revasya, one who is absorbed in the soul and who is experiencing Rati, and then Atmatruptascha Manava, that who is immune in the self, who rejoices in it, Atmanyevaja Santushta, and Tasya Karyam Na Vidyate, fully satiated with the self only. So, so in that state, Krishna, that is the state what is necessary for to be, to experience rasam, rasa dance, that rasam. So, gopis have come to that state, and gopis are experiencing that happiness from the soul to such an extent, and they have come to Krishna. You have to understand, gopis did not come to Krishna just to dance with Krishna. In the blissful nature of that soul, what they are experiencing, that is why the other verses were spoken before, that their sinful activities are wiped out, their pious activities are wiped out, they are completely freed from karmam. All these things were spoken prior to this, to point out to us that their state of consciousness was such that they had total freedom from karmam, karmic reactions have gone completely, and not only that, due to their Shraddha in Krishna, Shraddha means attention in the soul, knowing very well Krishna is the soul of every living entity, they have completely become realized inside. And this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Yastalpmaridirevasya Atmatruptascha Manava Atmanyevaja Sandushta Tasya Karyam Na Vidyate, that is their state of consciousness when they are coming to Krishna for the rasa dance. It's a very, very high, you can practically say they are the most elevated souls at that time when they have come to Krishna in that way. So, that it is in the attraction of the soul, or this rati, or the beauty of the soul, what they were experiencing. That is why gopis have forgotten everything. They have forgotten everything, and that is why they could drop that karmam at the particular time. Even the important karmam activity, what they were doing, they dropped it there straight away, and they went to Krishna, didn't they? So they could do that only because of this, that Atmarati Revasya. So, they don't have any idea that they didn't have any plan. No, let me complete what I'm doing now and then I'll go. They didn't even think like that. So, so they are saying that we heard Krishna's flute. We heard Krishna's flute. And that flute has, the sound of the flute has come through the wind to our ears. Nishamya Gidam, fourth verse. Nishamya Gidam Tadananga Vardhanam Vrajastriya Krishna Grihida Manasaha Sajagmu Anyonyam Alakshida Udhyama Sayatra Gandho Javalole Kundalaha. Look at that verse. When they heard the flute, of the sound of the flute, what impact it had on them? What happened to them? Nishamya Gidam Tadananga Vardhanam. If you hear Krishna's flute, you will lose your bodily concept of life. That's what he's saying. Anga means body, isn't it? Anga means body. Ananga means what is not body. So, Nishamya Gidam Tadananga Vardhanam. Ananga Vardhanam. That means what is not the body, which is the soul, in there our this sound of the flute has given the attraction for them to get attracted to the soul. To get attracted to the soul. Vrajastriya Krishna Grihida Manasaha. That the gopis of Vrindavanam, Vrajastriya Krishna Grihida Manasa, they are completely caught up in the Krishna Grihida Manasa, completely absorbed in Krishna. Completely absorbed in the Krishna. And they forgot everything and they come to the banks of river Yamuna. Tameva paramalpmanam. And you will see that in the 11th verse, Tameva paramalpmanam jarabudhya abhisangadaha jahur gunamayam deham sadhya prakshina bandhanaha. They are saying there, moksham or liberation means what? Moksham means, liberation means, while staying within this body, you can experience the happiness of liberation. You can experience the happiness of liberation. Because the inside us, that subtle body, if it goes away, if that subtle body inside us goes away, even though the gross body is there, the subtle body completely disappears. Completely disappears. That is called moksha, jivan mukta state. Gross body is there, but subtle body is gone. Subtle body is finished. When that happens, the whole creation, everything, you will see it as Krishna's Krishna. You will see it as Krishna. Paramatma Swarupam or Brahma Swarupam. And that is that is what is known as Mukti. So gopis were in that state that they had not conscious of anymore about themselves, about the body, about home, family, children, all those things, it is gone. And some gopis have left their gross body also at home. Gross body also at home. Because their husbands and their relatives did not allow them to go. And did not allow them to go. Sometimes people discourage others not to go to Bhagavatam class. They say, why are you wasting time going hearing all these things? How is it going to help you? You should be making 10 pounds an hour or 30 pounds an hour. people have this calculation all this. How many pound I am making every hour? So if it comes like that, and then they'll say, why waste your time? But sometimes those who are saying like that, they are good people. Why is it like that? Because inside them some guilt will be there for saying that when they say like that. So they keep on saying this many times. This guilt also will get strengthened inside as he keeps saying like that. So that is why sometimes in some people's case, Krishna deliberately puts some block. They don't go. So that the person who couldn't go, he'll feel guilty. Oh, I didn't go to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Although all this opportunity Krishna has given, but still I got busy with so many other things in this world. They'll think like that and they'll go. And you can see this very often in people's life, that they have got so many business in this life, it'll all come at the time when they have an opportunity to hear Bhagavatam, then they will be busy with something else. They'll go in some other direction. So Krishna puts these blocks sometimes to make them more serious about it. And practically you can see that every movement in this creation, it has only one purpose. What is that? To help us to get closer to the truth. To help us get closer to the truth. knowingly or unknowingly, we are actually moving towards the truth. We are not aware of that. Knowingly or unknowingly, we are going towards that. That is why Vedavyasa Maharshi made a statement, Lokavat tu Leela Kaivalyam. In the Mahabharatam, he mentions this. This world is actually nothing but Krishna's Leela. Krishna's Leela, this is Krishna's pastime. This world is Krishna's pastime. He's enjoying all of these things, and ultimately he will take us all back to to where we came from. Lokavattu Leela Kaivalyam. Kaivalyam is the goal ultimately. Only thing is, it may take a very long time. More we get attracted here, the more longer we will stay here. But the quicker we feel fed up with this place, then he will take us early from here also. So, Lokavastu Leela, Vedavyasa Maharshi completely reviewed everything, and in the Mahabharatam he mentions that. Because here, although we say avidya, ajnanam and all that, there is actually no ajnanam. Ajnanis don't exist here. Practically, there is no material existence either. In the sense that, srishti, creation, sustenance, maintenance, destruction, everything, nothing happens here. So, but, for spiritual advancement, you have to make these statements. Like what? Like this ajnanam, ignorance, distress, fear, war, material activities. And all these things, what we are seeing here through the senses, is nothing but what Krishna, Vedavyas calls it as Leela Kaivalyam. Leela Kaivalyam. So, in Krishna's play in this world, it is Krishna who comes as a materialist, and it is Krishna who comes as an ignorant person, and Krishna comes as a cruel person. Krishna comes as a person in the mood of goodness, in the mood of passion, in the mood of ignorance, and in different dresses, Krishna is appearing here, and this whole world is moving on in that understanding, in that Krishna different forms here, present here. We think, oh, somebody is a very big demon, isn't it? And we think of him so bad, isn't it? What we forget, that it is Krishna who is present in him also, that we forget that at that time. That body, temporary body, in that so many activities have happened. Unless Krishna has sanctioned it, how has it happened? Unless Krishna has sanctioned those activities, how did he do such things? many demonic personalities, we think that why has he appeared, what has he done in this world, so many things, isn't it? So, strictly speaking, from the Shastram point of view, there is no such thing called a demon, devotee, all these things, what we are in the Vyavaharam, we say like this. In reality, it is Krishna who is dressed up in all these different forms and continuing with the activities. Lokavattu Leela Kaivalyam. So, one who has come to understand that it is Krishna who is doing all these different, playing all these different roles, then he is liberated. Then there is no ignorant person here. And to whom can you instruct anything? So, if you want to know that, if you want to see someone as a wicked person, only then you can hate him, isn't it? But if you are not seeing anyone as wicked, then how can you hate that person? So, and similarly, only if you see something great in great quality in someone, that you have to feel liking for him or respect for him, because that also will go away in the same way. In the same way, so so these persons who have come to see things like that in that state, they are called. There is a word for that in the Shastram. It is called Niravarana Drishti. Niravaranam. Who says this? Gaudapada Acharya says this. Gaudapada Acharya, he was a famous personality whose commentary on Mandukya Upanishad is famous. Mandukya Kariga, it's called. Gaudapada Acharya. If you read that, you will see. He comes directly after Sukadeva Goswami in their disciplic succession, Jnanis. So he is a very great personality, Gaudapada Acharya. Gaudapada says there, he calls them as Niravarana Drishti. Niravarana Drishti means their vision has changed. We have a cover over our eyes. When we see things, we have a cover over the eyes. What does cover do? Cover makes us think somebody is good, somebody is bad, and somebody is great, somebody is small. These are avaranam in our vision. Avaranam in our vision. And somebody is a demon, somebody is a devotee, or somebody is a rakshasa, somebody is a brahmana. All kinds of things we have seen in this world. But if you have gone beyond all that, when you start experiencing that Krishna is present in all these things, our vision changes. We become completely, our drishti, our vision becomes free from the cover, avaranam. So when the avaranam goes, that is called niravaranam, niravarana drishti. It is mentioned like that. So in other words, it is only ajnanam inside that makes us think that somebody is a demon, somebody is a devotee. If you study Bhagavatam carefully, you will see there big, big demons are coming to fight with Krishna. Is it not? Krishna had to come here as Hiranyaksha. To kill Hiranyaksha, he had to take the form of the boar, Varaha. He has to come as Varaha and to kill Hiranyaksha. He had to come as Narasimha Murthy and kill Hiranyakashipu. Yeah. And then he had to come as Ramachandra and kill Ravana. Then he has to, and Kumbhakarna also. And then he had to come, Krishna has to come here and he had to kill Shishubala and Dandavatra. Is it not? So he killed all these demons here. He came here and he killed all these demons. But he made sure that they are all back with him there in the spiritual world. Is it not? So what does it show? It shows that Krishna doesn't have the hate like us. But when we read Bhagavatam, what do we see? Oh, he deserves that. Hiranyakashipu deserves that. He has given so much trouble to Prahlada. So he should be punished like that, we say. But the business was over for him very quickly. Although it is the same, that is why Prahlada said to Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakashipu is asking Prahlada, where do you get all this strength from? Prahlada answers, where you get your strength, the same source I am getting the strength. That is the indication to show to us, in the dress of Hiranyakashipu, it's Krishna who has come. In the dress of Prahlada also Krishna has come. Prahlada says that there, isn't it? Prahlada says to Hiranyakashipu, whichever souls you are getting the power to shout at me and to put me into all these problems, you know what all he did to Prahlada. It is the same source giving me the strength to stand against you and to fight with you, Prahlada says. Because as a father, Hiranyakashipu was in shock that a son could be so arrogant and so disobeying like that. He's asking that. But Krishna is playing these two different roles. What can you say? Krishna took Hiranyakashipu back to spiritual world, Prahlada also back to spiritual world. So that is why, that in all pastimes you will see this. When Shishubala was killed, Shishubala is related to Krishna. You know that. Shishubala is related to Krishna. Kunti Devi's sister's son is Shishubala. Kingdom in the king, in the royal family of Chedi, Chedi kingdom. That's where he comes from, Shishubala. When Kunti Devi came to see Krishna, on the day when the butter pot was broken, the Amodara pastime happened, that was the day, first time Kunti Devi had come to see Krishna. Kunti Devi came to see Krishna when this incident happened. So on that particular day when Kunti Devi came, Shishubala was on her hips. She was carrying Shishubala with her. When on that day, Kunti Devi's sister also came and she was carrying, they all come to see the baby, Krishna. And she was carrying the baby and he had four hands, an unusual scene. A person with four hands, Shishubala, with the four hands. So Krishna is tied to the mortar and he is standing there. Damodara Leela, that happened that day. That was the day. And Krishna is saying, they have selected the right day to come and visit me. When I am in this mess here, with fighting with Mother Yashoda, the gopis are enjoying that Krishna has been tied down and all that. All these things are going on. And Krishna says, what a day they have selected to visit us. Sometimes we also say like that. When we are in a mess, a visitor comes. How you feel in the same way. So what happened was, as soon as Shishupala was brought in, and Krishna looked at Shishupala, Shishupala looked at Krishna, the two hands dropped off from there, from his body. The two hands dropped off. And at that point, Shishupala's mother understood, because she knew that the day whoever sees him, because when the baby was born with four hands, imagine somebody is born with four hands, what happens? The mother will be concerned. So she was thinking that why it has happened like this, and she was concerned about it. And there was a voice from the sky mentioned that when he sees anyone and when his two hands drop off, that will be the person who is going to kill him. This was known to Shishupala's mother. So Shishupala lost his two hands, and immediately mother understood Krishna is going to kill him one day. And that is when mother told Kunti Devi to speak to Krishna that he should not kill him. And Krishna told him that up to 100 offenses I will tolerate. As long as the 100th one happens, I will take his head off. I'll kill him. And by Rajasuyam sacrifice, when Shishupala came there and he started abusing Krishna like anything. Before that, he has abused a lot about Krishna. So Krishna was counting every time, 99, 1, 2, 3, like that up to 99. When the 100th was spoken, Krishna took his head in the Rajasuyam. That you know, in the Rajasuyam sacrifice, that story. Yeah. So that Shishupala also, when he got killed, Yudhishthira Maharaj got a shock, because Shishupala's soul left the body, went into the sky, came back and joined at Krishna's lotus feet. Just see, Krishna has nothing against Shishupala. We think that Shishupala is a demon. We develop a lot of hate against him. Oh, how unfortunate he is. But Shishupala went back to Krishna. And immediately after Shishupala was killed, very next day comes Dandavakra with the club to fight with Krishna. Krishna smashed his skull, everything, with the club. But Dandavakra also goes back to Krishna at the end. At the end, they all go back to Krishna. So here, the thing is that Niravarana Drishti, that's what we are talking about. Niravarana Drishti means one who has understood all these things and do not feel any more hate towards Shishupala or Dandavakra or Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha. There is no need to feel. They are more fortunate than us in many ways, isn't it? After all, they have gone back to Krishna. So, in other words, when you start experiencing that, when you start becoming aware of this, that this world is nothing but Krishna's work. Krishna is performing different things here, Leela, here in different bodies. If you have come to understand that they have those personalities, they are freedom from the ignorance, ajnanam. Ajnanam has gone away from them. And as far as they are concerned, even though they appear to have a gross body, in reality they don't have a gross body. Because tadha bahirvrutri tadha mahavideha prakasha avarana kshayaha. That's how Gaudiya Bhattacharya mentions that. You have to read that book to understand that more, because he mentions there prakasha avarana kshayam. Avarana means coverage on us. Gaudiya Bhattacharya mentions there in the Karika, he says there avarana kshayam. Avarana kshayam means that what is that makes us to see world like this, in this way? Because there is something that is covering us, that we are not seeing the world properly. To see the world properly means to realize that this world is Krishna. That's not happening at the moment. At the moment we are seeing this world as material elements and sky, air, earth, water, air, ether, fire, and like the Abhra Prakriti, we perceive it like this. But this is avaranam. It is coverage. So avaranam goes away and prakasham, light comes in. Prakasham avarana kshayam happens. And that's why Patanjali also mentions this. And Patanjali's Yoga Sutram says prakasha avarana kshayam. That word is from Patanjali's Yoga Sutram. In other words, mahavideha, because that is the state when you don't have a gross body. When you don't have a gross body. Prakasharanshayam. That is the Patanjali's words. So, in other words, the coverage you have over your knowledge of the soul, that is gone. Something is covering us. We say that the knowledge is there inside, isn't it? With the soul. Every knowledge is, all the knowledge is inside in every one of us. But then something is covering that. That's why we are seeing the world like this. So Krishna, this point Patanjali is saying there, Prakasha Avarana Kshayaha, it means that if the Avaranam goes away, that curtain or curtain that is covering the soul, if that goes away, which is actually covering our knowledge inside, the whole earth, the whole creation is nothing but Prakasham, light. So that means everything what you see is Krishna and the whole creation is Krishna, and that is what is known as Maharasam. Rasam is what is spoken here and it is called as Maharasam. So in this Maharasam, the journey towards that Maharasam, in that journey, most important thing is the jiva has to do a lot of sadhana and ultimately he has to fail. That is how it is. That he has to do a lot of sadhana and then he has to fail. Because unless you have done a lot of sadhana and failed, you will not be able to enter into this rasam. This rasam, what rasakrida and all, what we, I don't know, each one of us, we have our own understanding of this rasa dance, I'm sure. All of us in our own mind, we would have thought something about this rasa dance. But in the Bhagavatam, rasam is discussed and described earlier somewhere, can't remember, that what is rasam? It talks about that in the third canto itself. Rasayade nama idam chakrameshwaraya. There is a whole verse there talking about rasam. So to understand rasam, it means to enter into rasam, not only sadhana you have to fail, you also have to fail in your material life. Material life also, you have to fail. Failure everywhere in this life. Failure in material life completely. And failure even in your spiritual life. Because if in all your sadhana is failed, suppose you have done a very intense sadhana for 30 or 40 years, and then after so many years of sadhana, you started feeling a kind of helpless state, isn't it? How many years I've been chanting Hare Krishna? And how many years I have restricted myself from enjoying anything in this world. A little bit of austerity, whatever we do. So, at some stage in life, one will feel a state of helplessness. A state of help. One should feel. Some people say, okay. Some people say, oh, I wasted all my time. I'm going doing something else now. In spiritual life, to say goodbye to spiritual life is not very difficult. Very easily that decision is made, isn't it? So that depends on our own realization inside, how much serious we are and how enthusiastically you are living your life of spirituality. So here you can see that two levels this failure will come. On one level, materially everything is finished. There is nothing much attraction in this world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls it as akinchanatvam, isn't it? Akinchanatvam. Akinchanatvam means that he has no desires anymore here. There's nothing to be done here in this world. Practically, life has come to a dead stop. There's nothing to do after that. Everything, all projects, planning, execution, everything over. One side, material life is over. On the other side, you have done a lot of sadhana so many years and nothing has happened. So you feel a kind of helplessness or failure inside, and that's necessary. And that is where spiritual life will begin. The beginning of spiritual life is at that point. That's what he says here. In Mahabharatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi therefore gave the name to Mahabharatam as Jayam. You have seen that? Actually Mahabharatam is a name used now, but prior to that, Vedavyasa Maharshi, the title he has given it is Jayam.
Jayam is the word he has given for that. Jayam of what? It is not because if you look into Mahabharatam story, what has written in the Mahabharatam, there seems to be nobody winning that war. All the Kauravas lost the war, they all got killed. Pandavas also got killed, and they were also didn't win the war. In reality, isn't it? Because what happened at the end, these three few Pandavas were left. Nobody else was there. Everyone else was killed. So Duryodhana says to the Yudhishthira Maharaj, now you go and rule your kingdom, he says. There's nobody to rule. So what is there to win? Duryodhana was happy that nobody lived at the end. He was saying like this, Chadur Panjava Sheshida. Four or five people were left behind after the war. Practically everybody was killed. So what are you going to rule now? Where is the kingdom? The land is there. So authority for the Kshatriya is that he has got somebody to rule over. But he hasn't had anything. So therefore, he says, Narayanam. Look at that verse we sing. Narayanam namaskritya naram jaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet. So that jayam is a question. Then, that Narayanam namaskritya, paying obeisances to Narayana, and naram jaiva narottamam, best among the men, Nara, which is Arjuna referred to, and paying obeisances to him, and then devim saraswatim vyasam. So obeisances to Saraswati Devi, to Saraswati, Mother Saraswati, and also to Vedavyasa Maharshi, he says, and wherever Nara loses, Nara fails at the end, Nara refers to us also. So there, to show Narayana, you require a guru, a spiritual master is required. That Sadguru, Vyasan, Vedavyasa Maharshi comes there. So, due to that presence of Vedavyasa Maharshi, due to his mercy, Saraswati gives the experience of Narayana to Nara. That is how that words you have to understand. It is not just paying obeisance to Narayana, Nara, Saraswati, Vedavyasa. That's not what that verse means. In translation, you will read it like that. I pay my respectful obeisances to Narayana, to Nara, Saraswati Devi, Vedavyas, Tato Jayamudirayet. That is how the word. But when we have due to the Jaya means that when Nara is a person like us, all of us, when we become a failure in this life, both spiritually and materially. When I say spiritually, failure means you have executed a lot of sadhana, but you are not getting anywhere. You feel you have failed in spiritual life. That is a spiritual failure. And you have failed in material life also. There is no attraction to the world here. If a state comes like that, that is our failure. When he has failed like that, at that point, Narayana has to be introduced to Nara. Narayana should be introduced to Nara. At that point, the spiritual master comes in the form of Vedavyasa Maharshi and introduces Saraswati Devi to us, which means gives us the transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is Saraswati. Do you understand? Transcendental knowledge is Saraswati. Spiritual master is Vedavyas. Nara is all of us. Narayana is Krishna. That verse is indicating that. That's why we recite that verse. Narayanam namaskritya naram jaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet. When that introduction happens and we get transcendental knowledge, that is called jayam or success. That is called jayam or success. Once again, when we fail in our material life completely, which means that you have lost all taste for this life in this world. There's nothing here. When you start realizing it, that what am I doing here? What is going on in this place? Ran here, ran there, worked hard so many years and tried to build up a family life, this, that, so many things we did here. And at the end, everything is gone and you are gone from here. For this, do you have to suffer so much going through all this?
So every attraction for the world is gone. That means that is failure in the material life. Engaged in a lot of sadhana in this life, did so many things sadhana. Somebody told us, do 100 rounds, he chanted 100 rounds every day. For about 20, 30 years, imagine that. Nothing has happened. Distributed a lot of books, nothing has happened. Went on all the harinams, nothing has happened. Ate a lot of prasadam, nothing has happened. And all the problems of this world is still there, nothing is leaving. So you start thinking that, what is the spiritual life? As much as material life was a failure, it also doesn't make any sense. Now spiritual life is also not making any sense. And continuously feeling that way, and feeling depressed about it, that you're not feeling any enthusiasm anymore, either for material life or for spiritual life. When that happens, that is what that verse is all about. Narayanam namaskritya naram jaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam. That Nara, all of us who are in that state, we are looking for something higher to come to tell us what should we do, isn't it? That is the time when transcendental knowledge will hit you. Otherwise it is difficult. Theoretically we can study it a lot, but it won't have its impact on us. But when everything is failing in life, failure means not that it's not considered as a disqualification in any way. It's just happened like that in life. For many people happens in different ways, isn't it? Some people will never give up this material life. They will, even if they become American president, they will still making plans. How can I stay another term after that? So attraction never goes. What can you do? Attraction only, isn't it? Desires inside. And somebody else, they get fed up with this very easily and they leave everything and go away from here. So it is different for different people. That is one's purva vasana and purva karma phalam. That's all it is. So whatever happens, materially he calls it as akinchanattvam. In Bhagavatam the word used is akinchanattvam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses the word akinchanattvam. Nishkinjana, all these are the words for that. So, when that happens in life, and then you come to spiritual world and started taking spiritual life seriously, in the first year or second year there will be a lot of enthusiasm. But as years pass through, you will start feeling that I have practiced so many years spiritual life, but nothing has happened. I'm still just feeling the same emptiness inside. The Shastram is saying there is a soul, there is a spiritual world, and we will be going there and all that. How true is all these things? If you start, thoughts can happen in anybody's mind, isn't it? It's not, mind will give you any different thoughts, different times. So, there it's a failure, here also it's a failure. It is at that time, Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam. By Krishna's mercy, Vedavyasa Maharshi or his representative, which means the spiritual master, they introduced Saraswati Devi to us, which means transcendental knowledge to us. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. And when that happens, Tato Jayamudirayed, then your life is successful. In other words, whatever you may do in material life, as far as Vedavyasa Maharshi is concerned, it's all a failure at the end. It's all a failure at the end. In order to bring this point to us very strongly, in the Mahabharatam, there is two stories spoken. And the best example they have chosen is Bhishma. You know that. Bhishma was a very powerful personality and he wanted to turn the whole world all the time upside down. So much power he had in him. And Bhishma says this to Yudhishthira Maharaj about this. Bhishma says to him, to Yudhishthira, you know, after the Mahabharata war was over, you remember that incident in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna, Pandavas, everybody goes together to see Yudhishthira Maharaj. So there is a discussion between Yudhishthira and Bhishma, which is famous in the Bhagavatam as well as in the Mahabharatam. Krishna was also present there. So at that instance, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked some question to Bhishma about Dharma. He is asking several questions. And Bhishma says to him that then why should I say anything, he says. Because he is looking back in his own life, all what he did in this world, and he says to him, actually all this means nothing, he says. The life has not much meaning, he says to him. Because from the day one, one who has struck to the principles, that means truthfulness, steadiness, everything, and one who has withdrawn from the activities outside in this world, external activities, fruitive activities, everything, and he should realize the truth within himself as early as possible, Bhishma says to Yudhishthira Maharaj at that point. He says to him like that. Instead he says that simply thinking that life has no goal, no purpose, and if you think like that, Bhishma says to him, I'll talk to you about a story about what has happened. Actually, Bhishma puts it as a story. Actually, it is Bhishma's story itself. This is how the scholars of Mahabharatam talks about it. You see, the story, I have spoken before also about that story. And Medhavi Upakhyanam, it is called. And there it is, a little boy instructing his father, who was very learned. And that is one incident, that is called Medhavi Upakhyanam. A little boy instructing his old father, who is very learned. That is one of them. And there is another one, which is called as Mangi Upakhyanam. Mangi Upakhyanam. Mangi, not the monkey what we are talking about. Mangi is the name there. Mangi Upakhyanam. So, Mangi's story, you know, Mangi was a businessman. And this monkey's life, Bhishma is talking about that. He says there that he collects a lot of things from the villages, and he had a bullock cart, and he loads the bullock cart with all the goods, and he is driving that bullock cart to the town center to sell all the goods. So while carrying all the goods in the cart, he is thinking that so much I'm carrying today, I will sell all this and I'll make so much profit. And tomorrow I'll invest the profit also into business and I'll make more money, like all the business people do, isn't it? They'll make more money from that. And in this way, I will expand my business and I'll become a big businessman. He's thinking like this. And he's sitting on his bullock cart and he's sleeping also and he's dreaming all these things same time. On the way to the town, there was one camel lying there on the street. On the street there was a camel lying there. So what happened was that in the bullock cart he had a lot of goods. There was oil, there was grains, vegetables, so many things he has bought from the in the village, and he's carrying that to the town, because he has to arrive there in the morning for sales. But on the way this camel was lying on the street. So our monkey with his bullock cart, the bulls didn't see the camel which was lying on the street, it was dark. So when the bullock cart came through, the camel got disturbed and it got up. And the two bulls and the yoke and the monkey, everything is standing in the air like this. It all got lifted and it is standing like this. And everything that was in the bullock cart fell on the road. All the oil, the vegetables, the grains, everything was lying on the road. On the road. At that time, the camel has got up. Camel has got him. So all that plans of monkey finished there. About his future plans which he was making on the way. About his business plan, in other words. That's all finished at that point. So it mentions here that in our imagination and in our mind, we are making so many plans about this world, isn't it? It's just like the empire, like that empire that I'll become a king or whatever, wealthy man or member of the parliament or prime minister or whatever, it is in our head, it is working there. But as soon as the camel gets up, you will know that we are nothing here. So here, up to that point, everyone will be working very hard. That the camel smashed everything down, isn't it? So, mentions, Bhishma says to Yudhishthira, that the best thing is not to make such plans, first of all. Not to make such plans in life. And monkey says to him, there is nothing much to gain in this world by fulfilling the desires. So, many people are saying, who are commentators on the Bhagavatam, sorry, on the Mahabharatam, they say that although Bhishma was saying this story to Yudhishthira, actually it is his own story. If you look carefully, you will see that it is correct. Why? If you remember, after saying all these things, that when Bhishma mentioned this story to Yudhishthira, Krishna, who was present there, he looked at Bhishma and smiled. It is from that smile they are saying, the reason Krishna smiled was, Bhishma was saying his own story through this Mangi Ubhakhyanam, through this episode of Mangi. Actually, it is Bhishma's story itself. But Bhishma didn't want to say it like that directly. Instead, put it as a story like this and said this to Yudhishthira. And Krishna sensed that. After all, Krishna knows what is going through Bhishma's mind, what is going through Yudhishthira's mind as well. So he sensed that and he smiled at Bhishma. And that time it says there, so you can remember Bhishma's case. Bhishma was a very powerful personality, wasn't he? That's why the word Bhishma has come to him. Because of his strength of determination. So determined he was. For the sake of his father Shantanu, he said, I will not get married. You know that, the story between that. So for sake of Shantanu, I will not get married, and he decided to stay as a brahmachari whole life. First one. So determined he was. And not only that, he had two bulls whom he brought. Who are they? Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. They are the bulls we are talking about. Chitrangada and Amba Ambiya Ambalika, let's go back to history. Shantanu, after Shantanu's time, Bhishma should have become the king. But Shantanu had a relationship with Satyavati, and Satyavati's children will get the throne. This was the agreement. Satyavati was a very beautiful personality. Shantanu got attracted to her and married her. And the children, but agreement was, Bhishma was already there. Satyavati said, I will not marry you. Satyavati didn't say that. Satyavati's father said this to Shantanu, that you will not be allowed to marry Satyavati unless you agree to make Satyavati's children as the next king. And Shantanu had this agreement earlier with Satyavati's father. So naturally, Shantanu was in a dilemma. What should I say to Bhishma? Bhishma, naturally, he thought Bhishma will want the kingdom. So Bhishma said at that time, that doesn't matter, I can stay as a brahmachari, I will not get married, is that enough? Only then I'll have children and they will look for the throne. That won't happen. I don't want the throne either. But rather than being a king, he wanted to be a kingmaker. That was his role there. So this Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, they were born, isn't it? Then you know that story after that in Mahabharatam, how it comes. So keeping Amba Ambi Ambalika, were there three girls, and he brought them there, but unfortunately Vichitravirya could not marry them. Vichitravirya could not marry them because Amba was already attracted to another Salu, I think, somebody with whom she had relationship, so she was let off. Ambiya was not attracted, and both of them, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, they died. Both of them died. Bhishma's plan was to make them as the king and rule himself. He'll keep them as a figurehead there and rule from behind. It was Bhishma's plan was like that. But didn't happen because Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, they also left. Then later on came Dhritarashtra from Ambalika, isn't it? Ambamiya and Ambalika. From Vedavyasa Maharshi, the children were born, and Dhritarashtra and Vidura, they were born. And from Dhritarashtra came this Duryodhana and others. Even there, Bhishma has not given up. Bhishma still wanted to rule the world through Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra's children were there, and who was this, our Duryodhana and others. Although he was not happy with him, Bhishma was not happy with Duryodhana, but still he thought the kingdom should carry on, because that was their headquarters, isn't it? Center of control, power, control of the power. So, initially he tried to bring this Amba, Ambi and Ambali and get them married, and somehow from that the progeny will take control of the kingdom. All this planning happened. Out of them, one of the girls left with a powerful revenge towards Bhishma. She went and performed very severe penances, and Shikhandi was born from that. And all she wanted was Bhishma should be killed, and she got the blessing from the demigods that Shikhandi will kill Bhishma in the war. That's all she wanted. And Bhishma was killed by Shikhandi in the war, which you know. So, and then he brought Dhritarashtra and Vidura, and you keeping them there somehow together, and he wanted to run the kingdom. So he tried all that, and that also collapsed. Then the Mahabharata war happened, the whole thing collapsed. So you can imagine Bhishma had a pretty long life, and in that life he has seen a lot. The whole rise and fall of this Kauravas kingdom, and prior to that all the Vijitravirya and Chitrangada and their life, he has gone through all of that, and behind the scene he was maneuvering everything, manipulating the kingdom very well. And now a point has come in life, through his own realization he started saying it was all a waste of time. It is all a waste of time. So so he thought, so, and ultimately what happened? All beat up each other and killed each other. All ended up in a complete frustration for Bhishma. So everything got completely gone. So there he says, I have done a few mistakes, Bhishma says. First of all, I ate the food given to me by Duryodhana. And because of that, the blood in my body is completely polluted, he says, eating that food. But I've now come to my senses, he says, that you are saying, says to Yudhishthira like this, you are talking about Kshatriya Dharma, isn't it? Don't get attracted by all that, he says. Kshatriya Dharma, Brahmana Dharma, Shudra Dharma, Vaishya Dharma. I was also thinking like that one day. And to you now, only my address is, he says, only instruction I can tell you, what I can tell you is that use this life to realize the truth and get out of here. This is Bhishma's instructions to Yudhishthira. So, in the Mahabharatam, when this is spoken, there it says, Kodharma sarvadharmanam bhavada paramomata kim javan muchade jandur janma samsara bandhanat. There is a question raised there. What should one chant to free oneself from the bondage or from the cycle of birth and death or material existence? Kodharma sarvadharmanam bhavada paramomata kim javan muchade jandur janma samsara bandhanat. To free oneself from the samsara bandhanam. Ask that question. You can ask that question, I'll give you the answer. Don't ask me anything anymore, he says to Yudhishthira. Because some people, they come to their senses at the time of death. Although late, but at least it happens to them before death. For some people it never happens. That is the difference. In Bhishma's case, he acknowledges that at least at the time of death he has come to his senses. After seeing this world, living in this world, experiencing this world, he has understood there is no substance in any of these things. And that's what he is saying there. Kodharma sarvadharmanam bhavada paramomada kim javan muchade jandur janma samsara bandhanat. A jandu or a living entity, when he wants to free oneself from the janma samsara bandhanat, from the control of this cycle of birth and death, what should he do? This is the question. Ask me that question, I will answer you this. And that is when the thousand names of Vishnu was spoken. Chanting the thousand names of Vishnu, Sahasranama was spoken at that time. So, here also, you can see here that he says to after talking about this monkey story, he says to him that there is no point. Don't become like that monkey. He says everything will only up to the point till the camel gets up. He says when the camel gets up, everything is finished. The bull, the two bulls, they are not the truth. The camel is the truth, he says. You understand? Camel is the truth. The bulls are not the truth. In other words, you will use the two bulls and try to make your business plans. But when the camel gets up, all your business plans, the bulls, everything goes with that. He says to him like that. So similarly, when we fail in this world, materially and spiritually, when we fail, that is Krishna's success. Yeah? That is Krishna's success. In other words, when we fail, what does that mean? It means that we become Krishna conscious. When we fail. Otherwise, we won't become Krishna conscious. When we fail materially and spiritually, everything fails in this world, then it is our failure, but it is Krishna's success. Do you see the point? That is Krishna's success, that is, because we fail. In other words, when we fail means what? Our ahankaram, false ego, has gone completely. Like in the case of Bhishma, like many other devotees. So you will see, starting from Bhishma, all the great devotees, at the end what happens? Sharanagati and surrender to Krishna. There is no other thing in life to do. That's the only thing one has to do in life, to surrender and complete Sharanagati to Krishna. And that is why Mahabharatam is called Jayam. It is the success of Narayana and a failure of Nara. Yeah? Our failure, Krishna's success, that's why it is called Jayam, the word. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayamudhirayed. So that is how this word Jayam has come. Otherwise it has no meaning in Mahabharatam to use the word Jayam. You may ask the question, who's Jayam? Who has won? Pandavas didn't win. They lost everything. Kauravas also lost everything. So who has won that? Nobody has won. Krishna's success, that is. Why? Through that Mahabharata war, Krishna smashed the false ego of so many Kshatriyas and so many other people in this world. That's what he has done. That is Krishna's success. Killing our false ego, that's what Krishna has done in the Mahabharata war, isn't it? He killed all of those powerful kings who had come there to fight. He made them to fight each other and killed everyone, both sides. And that is Krishna's success. And that is why Mahabharatam is called Jayam. So whenever we recite that verse in before Bhagavatam classes, isn't it? This is the whole message behind it, that verse. Otherwise, what do we say? We'll say the verse and then we'll say the translation. That's how nowadays. We'll say the words and we'll say the translation. What it means, only God knows what it means. Without knowing anything, what is that verse saying to us? I pay my respectful obeisances to Narayana. Then what does it say? I pay my obeisances to... Yeah, you know the Bhagavatam verse, that is the verse meaning. Direct meaning is that. But if you little bit go deeper into it, what is it saying to us? It says like that. I took it from the Bhagavatam as it is, it is there. All it says is that before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayana, unto Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Sri Vyasadeva, the author. That is the direct translation, that's fine. But why is it implies all these things in there? Mahabharatam becomes meaningful when you understand this. That surrender, everyone loses in this. Everybody is a failure in this world as far as Shastram is concerned. Unless he has surrendered to Krishna and got himself released from the body. Whether it is an American president or a man in the street, it doesn't matter. As far as Shastram is concerned, we are all failure. You know that Shastram doesn't think there is somebody big in this world or small in this world. In the eyes of the Shastram, nobody is big here. Nobody is small here. Nobody is small here. So that is why it is like that. So when that happens, spiritual life is like that. Spiritual life is that when all our sadhana and all our effort completely fails here, and our personality, the false ego, completely became cleared up inside. In other words, the ego also totally vanishes inside. It is at that time Krishna's mercy comes. Krishna's mercy comes. And we get a little intimation of the mercy from Krishna. I've done everything, tried everything, and everything, nothing has worked, and I can't go turn in any other direction. That situation. And it is at that time, the inside, our own inside, there will be a serious effort or endeavor to realize something higher than this world. Realize something higher than this world. Which way to go, you don't know. There is total disappointment inside. But which way to turn, which direction to turn, we have no idea. And it is only at that point Krishna's mercy comes. Krishna's mercy comes. It's an important step in the spiritual life. It happens to all the great devotees, all the great jnanis. This has happened at some time or the other in their life. Otherwise it won't happen. Because it is so subtle, that is what I'm saying. These things is not going to happen through on a institutional level. Institution can organize things and manage things, but these things has to happen within oneself. It is here that has to happen inside, not in another place. It has to happen right here. So you can see here that there in that particular situation, when a devotee or a aspirant person in spiritual life, when he fails everywhere, materially, spiritually, everywhere, and not knowing which direction to go, complete frustration, disappointment inside, Krishna's mercy comes to him and that gives him some life at that point. And gives him some life at that point. That's why you will see there in the when the devotee feels that necessary to receive that mercy from Krishna, when he feels that urgency inside, it is at that time from Krishna comes a flow. Instead of going from the devotee side towards Krishna, from the opposite direction, from Krishna's side towards the devotee, the mercy starts flowing. In sadhana, what is happening? From the devotee side, it's going towards Krishna, isn't it? In sadhana, from devotee side, you are going, devotee's heart is going towards Krishna. But that is over now. And at this stage, which is known as the Kripa, Kripa Sakshalkaram or Kripa, mercy, the flow is not from here to there, but from there to here, from Krishna's side to devotee's side. So, that is what is called Kripa. That's what's called Kripa. In the Kathopanishad, you will mention there is a verse there which says that Nayam Alma Pravajanena Labhyo Namethaya Nabahuna Shrutena Yamaivesha Vrunudetena Labhya Tasesha Malma Vrunudetanim Swam. This verse is in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada just quoted that somewhere, I don't know where it is, somewhere. He has quoted this verse from Kathopanishad to tell us that Nayam Alma Pravachani Na Labhyo Na Medhaya Na Bahuna Shrutena Yamai Vaisha Vrunude Tena Labhyaha Tasesha Alma Vivrunude Tanim Swam. He says that mentions here that Yamai Vaisha Vrunude Tena Labhyaha. First thing is the jiva or the devotee or conditioned soul, he takes Krishna shelter. He takes Krishna shelter first. So to take Krishna shelter is not easy, isn't it? So in order that to happen, first he has to experience this life in this world and become disappointed with this material life as well as in spiritual life. Both things has to happen. Only at that point he will take Krishna shelter.
Yamai veshe vrunade tena labhyaha.
That Jiva takes shelter of Krishna, and when that shelter, when he takes Krishna shelter, Krishna gives him shelter. Krishna gives him shelter. So when Krishna gives varanam, that is the word they use, that varanam means that you have accepted Krishna that as the shelter completely. And to accept Krishna as the complete shelter is called varanam. Varanam means to take complete shelter of Krishna. Now Jiva takes Krishna of shelter of Krishna, that is one varanam. But on the other hand, when Krishna gives the shelter to him, that is another varanam. That's also, when Krishna gives the varanam or Krishna gives the shelter to the Jiva, then Jiva has become independent. Jiva has become independent. So that is what gopis have spoken to Krishna. Gopis are going to give a lot of logic now to Krishna about their reason for their surrender, why they have come. They are going to explain that to Krishna in the Nayam Alma Pravajani Nalabhyo Namedhaya Nashbhuna Shrutena Yamaivesham Brunade Tenalabhya Tasesham Alma Brunade Tanim Swam. That Kathopanishad says that the soul what will not be realized by studying Shastram or by your intelligence or by hearing sometimes, even it may not happen. It is not available in that way, but Atma who takes him seriously and surrenders to him, he is the one, he will achieve the self-realization or he will get the soul. That is how it's spoken. So Atma reveals himself to that person who has surrendered unto him. So Gopi says to him, Gopi says to Krishna, that in their prayers to Krishna, they are asking for this. Why? The reason is this. One who is a dasa, dasa means a servant who has surrendered, he is completely independent. It's a different than the mundane world. In the mundane world, if you are a servant of somebody, you are dependent on that person. In spiritual life, if you are a servant, you are completely independent. Or completely independent. Because here you can say in the mundane life, material life, we can say the master, he is independent, and the servant is a slave, isn't it? Servant has to work for the master. Servant has to work for the master. But in spiritual world, spiritual life, the servant is independent and the master is dependent. Master is dependent. There is a difference there between the spiritual life and the material life. In material life, the master is independent and servant is dependent. In spiritual life, servant is independent and master is dependent. Why? Because he has surrendered there. Because of that reason alone, he is independent. Why? Because in normal way, in the mundane point of view, we need independence in the body, we need independence in the mind. But from the spiritual point of view, what we require is freedom from the body and freedom from the mind. Freedom from the body and freedom from the mind. That is why here, because we want freedom for the body and freedom for the mind, we are dependent on the master. In spiritual life, because we want freedom from the body and freedom from the mind, we are independent. Surrendered state means what? Dasa means surrendered state, isn't it? Sharanagati or surrender. Once you are surrendered, what it means is that due to surrender, dasa bhavam, what happens is that this freedom from the body and freedom from the mind, because you have handed over to Krishna everything. Handed over your body to Krishna, handed your mind to Krishna. That means you have become independent. and then you are completely free. That is why in spiritual life, although you are a servant, you are completely free. Whereas the master has the responsibility to look after this body as well as the mind. It is in Krishna's control from then on. Therefore, in the spiritual life, the servant is independent and the master is dependent. In material life, master is independent and servant is dependent. That relationship is important. So when you hand over the body and the mind to Krishna, the jiva hands over to Krishna, he is free from the influence of the body and the mind. In other words, in that dasyam or dasa state or the sharanagati state, he is already liberated, jivan mukta state. And that is why Anjaneya Swami Hanuman has got so much power. You see, why Hanuman has got all this strength and power, what we say, is because of this. That the surrender to Ramachandra is complete. He has handed over his body and the mind to such an extent to Ramachandra. He never thinks independently of anything. Whatever Ramachandra wants, it happens through Hanuman because of this surrender only. And this is the principle behind it. When we don't surrender to Krishna and we act independently, and then we will always remain here under the control of the body and the mind, at that time, our situation is that we have to serve somebody in this world. Service will be necessary. And therefore, there is a master and we are the servant. Master is independent, we are dependent on the master. But when we are handed over the body and the mind, everything to Krishna, and completely surrendered to Krishna, we are freed from the body as well as the mind. That is our liberated state. In other words, at that time, we have become completely independent, and Krishna has become the responsibility to look after our body and as well as our mind. So, we'll continue later. 15 minutes. So, when we surrender the body and the mind to Krishna, then we become independent. Because that responsibility is not with us anymore, looking after the body and the mind. So, Anjaneya Swami, Hanuman, why is he considered so powerful? Because of this, what he has done. He has handed over the body as well as the mind to Ramachandra. Therefore, nobody can do anything to him. He is completely independent from the body and the mind. And that is Ramachandra's responsibility after that. Everything what happens to Hanuman. As long as body and the mind, as long as you think it is yours, you are in trouble. You are in trouble or you are in distress. You always have to accept that distress also. As long as you take the responsibility for the body and the mind, and you are a slave. You are a slave. So, no matter how much you keep it under control, and whatever you may do, so long as you have this identity with the body, you are a slave. You are a slave of that. When you become a dasa or a servant, then, and there is an aham, I am a servant. That anyone also has an ego like that. I am a servant of Ramachandra. That ego, that aham, is not actually the false ego what we carry as aham. Our aham is ahankaram, isn't it? Ahankaram it is. And his consciousness is aham bodham. That is the difference. We have ahankaram. He has aham bodham. What does that mean? Ahankaram means I have identified with the false ego in me. The false ego in me. That is ahankaram. His identification, Anjaneya Swami's identification is aham bodham. That means he identifies with the real I, which is pure consciousness, Ramachandra or Krishna, whichever way you address that. That's pure consciousness, that aham bodham. So if you are situated in the aham bodham, then you are a dasa, but at the same time you are completely independent. You are situated in the aham bodham. But ahankara means you are identified with the body as well as the mind. So, when one has surrendered to Krishna, experience of Krishna, that gopis have started experiencing. That is why you will see that the way Shukabrahmarshi talks about that in the Bhagavatam is Jagaukalam Vamadrisham Manoharam. If you see in the third verse in that 29th chapter, the last line, Vanam Jadal Komala Gobiranjitam Jagaukalam Vamadrisham Manoharam. This is a very important line, that Jagaukalam, 29th chapter, verse 3. Chapter 29, verse 3. Jagaukalam Vamadrisham Manoharam. Jagaukalam, Jagaukalam Vamadrisham Manoharam. He says, Kalam, Kalam means the sound. Kalam, that sound Kalam means is hearing the sound of the flute. Hearing the sound of the flute. So, sound is important because sound is what liberates a person. To cause of liberation is the sound. Remember, out of all the five tanmatra, shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham, which are the subtle aspect of the five material elements, out of that, the most subtle of all is sound. Is it not? Most subtle of all that is sound. The most gross of all that is the smell. Rasam, gandham. Gandham is the most gross one, and the most subtle one is the sound. Most subtle one is the sound. Jagaukalam Vamadrisham Manoharam. When Krishna played the flute, the very sound of that flute was liberating for the gopis. So, shabdam. So, what is kalam then? Kalam means something that is very sweet, but it's not very spudam. Spudam, these are the terminology for the sound. Sound has got different variations. For example, let me come back to that. Then many things, we don't enjoy it by fully understanding the meaning of the word, isn't it? Sometimes in music, we don't understand fully the meaning of all the words in the song, but we enjoy the music. We enjoy the music, the sound of the music. You enjoy it, isn't it? Many, many songs are like that. You may not know the whole meaning, but something attracts you towards the song. You get attracted towards the song. You enjoy that song. Sometimes people say, some verses in the Bhagavatam, it's nice to hear. You may not understand the meaning of it, but it's very nice to hear those verses being recited. Some happiness, some pleasure from hearing that, isn't it? But ultimately, it's only a sound. You have not understood the meaning of that verse or anything. Strictly speaking, if you think a little bit more deeper, actually, the meaning of the verse has no meaning. The verse has some meaning, but actually it is not the meaning of the verse that it means, it matters. It's not the, because meaning of anything is the language, isn't it? Meaning, the essence is the language. So, suppose you have spoken in one language to me, which I do not know. It doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's only just a sound only, isn't it? Suppose you have abused me in some other language. Of course, I don't know the language. I might smile at you because you are talking to me something. And I might smile because I don't know what you are saying. Although you may be abusing me verbally very much, but still it doesn't bother me because I don't know the meaning of that, isn't it? So, it's only a sound. So, Shabdam has, in Vedam, Shabdam has got a lot of pramukhyam, importance there. Because, you know, in the Vedam, there is a branch of Vedam called Niruktam. Niruktam, like main four Vedas, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvavedam, the four main Vedas. And there are Upavedam for that, branches from that. Niruktam, Jyotisham, Vyakaranam, Chandasa, Kalpam, these are all the Upavedam. They are called Upavedam. Out of that, one of that is called Niruktam. Niruktam. According to that Niruktam, or that's also called a Shiksha. Shiksha is also referred to as Shiksha. These are for the Vedic scholars, but I'm just trying to mention few things from the relationship with the sound. How is understood in the Vedam. Vedam has got this Niruktam, also known as the Shiksha Shastram, the Shastram of Shiksha, it is called. same sound, if it comes from a Brahmana's mouth, if it comes from a Kshatriya's mouth, if it comes from a Vaishya's mouth, or if it comes from a Shudra's mouth, that sound can be different. That sound can be different. Sound can be different. Because Varnakramam, it is in the Vedam like that. After chanting every mantram, when they recite the Varnakramam of that, they'll say, the same mantram they will chant, Agnishchame, there is one word, Agnishchame. they will say that each of these letters belongs to which Varnam, they can say like that. For example, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, four castes, isn't it? Now, these castes, as far as the human species is concerned, we classify them like that. But the same category, this classification exists in the sound also. In the sound also. So, when they chant the mantra, they can say that this letter belongs to which category? Whether it's a letter from the Brahmana category or a Kshatriya category or Vaishya category. So, now, based on our understanding in the modern world, if you start saying things like that, that, oh, it's a, his caste is, this letter belongs to that caste, or this caste, then it will, whole thing will be misunderstood. Caste is not the thing there. It's not the caste that importance at that time. Because, suppose you say the letter R, the letter R. So, according to, say I'm saying that letter R, depending on the vasanas in me, when it comes out, it will take into one of these channels. It will be a Brahmana, or it will be a Kshatriya, it will be a Vaishya, or it will be a Shudra. Depending on my vasanas inside. Yeah. So, my vasana inside decides which varnam that letter belongs to. That letter belongs to. This is a Shabda Shastram. Mantra Shastram it's called. Mantra Shastram is a big Shastram. You know, in Vedam, everything is centered around the sound, isn't it? In its most simplest form is what we are chanting the holy name, Mahamantra. It's called Mahamantra, isn't it? Why? There is something to it beyond the words and its meaning. Beyond the word and beyond its meaning, there is something more to it. That Shabdam of that. Prabhupada was asked by this question many times. Different devotees asked, what should I do when I am chanting Hare Krishna? What should I think about? What should I be my consciousness when I am chanting Hare Krishna? Prabhupada answered, you don't have to think about anything. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to worry about the consciousness. Just chant Hare Krishna, he said. Why? Because the Shabdam, the sound of this mantra, Mahamantra itself, has a powerful effect of purification. It can purify things. So, similarly, so the same sound is coming from different people. The point here is that according to the bhavam of that person, it will come through that sound. It will come through that sound. So, behind all these mantras, that madhuram aspudam, in other words, sputada of that mantra, that will be present there, or in other words, that particular person's vasana or his subtle body's impressions inside will flow through that words what he speaks, and it will come out, and it will affect the person who is receiving that. This is the what they call it as mantra shastram. Mantra shastram. If you read Saundari Lahari, in there 50% of it is related to mantra shastram. Very subtle level it is, but to understand that also is very difficult. Even though it is explained well, still you will find it very hard, because we are so gross in our understanding of the sound. For our accent is important for us. We don't consider which accent you are speaking with. That is more important for us in this world, isn't it? But from the sound side of it, those who knows the Mantra Shastram or Shabda Shastram, for them what is important is, what is your vasana inside when you have spoken that word? That's more important for them. That is why those who are following the spiritual path, you will see there that Shabdam is the same. So that's why important here is that vasana comes out. Vasana comes out through a person. His person will come through his sound. So that's why when you receive mantra diksha, and all that, you should not go and take it from anyone, everyone. Because why? There is a danger there. If you take mantra diksha from someone who doesn't have very good vasanas inside, all his bad vasanas will come through his sound to you. Suppose Guru is interested in business, you will also become interested in business in this world. That will be the next vasana what will develop. Even if you didn't have it, if you have taken that mantra from him, and if he has injected that vasana into you through that sound, you will also become energized with that vasana, and that vasana will develop inside. That is the problem. That is why many times mantra diksha is not allowed actually, and nobody, people don't give also like that freely, like we do, but many people in traditionally, nobody will give mantra diksha like that freely, unless he knows that whatever that is coming from him is pure, and the person who receiving it is also is in a pure state. So there is certain standard for all these things. It's not free for all, open market business. It's not like that. So, Shabdam is the same. For example, Shri Krishnaya Nama. Somebody says Shri Krishnaya Nama. So, it's also a sound, isn't it? It's also a sound. Sound is the same. But all the mantras, you can see this in the Bhagavatam also. Who has given Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? Who gave that? Narada Maharshi gave to Dhruva, isn't it? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now you start thinking, why this is such a big thing, big deal about it? Somebody else could have given it. Narada Maharshi had to come all the way from there to give this mantra. Why? Because when Narada Maharshi gives that, Narada Maharshi's vasanas will go through that sound to Dhruva. That's why it's given, it is mentioned like that. Similarly, you can see in Chitraketu's case also, Angiras and others came there, isn't it? Angiras came with Sri Narada Maharshi to talk to Chitraketu. And Angiras says to Chitraketu, that we wanted to give you the mantra diksha, but you were not ready for it. Do you remember that? Chitraketu was more interested in having a child and having a family, everything. He was so absorbed in that although Angiras came there to give him the mantra diksha, to give the mantra to him, he sensed that you are not ready for it, so I didn't give it to you, he says. You will see this in the Bhagavatam itself. So similarly, Sri Narada Maharshi gave the same mantra which we all know, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He gave that to Dhruva. Dhruva and told him, go to the forest, chant that mantra for 6 months and you will see Krishna. Suppose you sit there and chant 6 months, what will happen? Nothing will happen. Why? Why is that? Because it has not come from the proper source, it hasn't come. So that shows the power of the mantra. When we receive the mantra, if it is come from the right source, because that person has that vasanas inside, the right vasana inside, it will come through that. This is a subtle way mantra works. In a subtle level, all that vasanas in him will come through that sound into your subtle body. Into your subtle body. And that is what here is happening in this case also. Jagau kalam vamadrisham manoharam. It says there in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? So it's like, you know, this homeopathy tablets. They all look same, white, small, yeah, sweet. All of them are sweet. And they'll give the same medicine for all the illnesses. And people start saying, you gave me, when I had a cold, you gave me this medicine. And when I have a diarrhea, you're giving me the same medicine. What kind of system is that? The difference is this, that although they appear like the same, the substance in the in the tablet, in that small thing, is different. Similarly, Mantram is the same. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You can chant, I can chant, everybody can chant. But from where you got that mantra, the person who has given it to you, he will load it with his vasanas inside. His realizations and his spiritual strength will come through that words, that mantra to you. So that will have its impact on the person who is receiving it. Who is receiving it? So the main thing is that sound is the same thing, but that vasana and his bhavam also, whatever that is inside him, then that will come through that. That is what actually initiation means. Proper initiation is all that. So great personalities who have lot of tapas and who have lot of realizations, when they give it to you, that mantra, it will come to you, and from that sound, what happens, what is called as spodam. Spodam happens from there. And that will start working inside. It will start its work inside. So, suppose you have taken it from a person who have not much of an austerity, who haven't got much of a penances, or who haven't got much of a realizations. In that case, whatever vasana he has got, or whatever realizations he has got, that will also come through his own words, his own sound, what has come from him. And if you chant that, his vasanas will come to us. His vasanas will come to us. This is not a simple thing, what we make out of this initiation and the chanting and mantra and all that. Mantra is a big science in itself. Mantra Shastram it's called. Shabda Shastram, Mantra Shastram. Those who have studied them, they can talk about it better. They know about it better. That is why one who has got a lot of upasana. There was one Narasimha Bhattatripad, very famous he was. Mandrovasana he has done to such a level with Lalita Sahasranamam. And it has reached to such a stage, whatever he says, Sri Parvati has to do. That stage he reached due to his upasana. So you can see the power of upasana. Without any strength, without any upasana, any sadhana. Upasana means on a higher level. With sufficient upasana, what happens? The chanting of the mantra and with his purification inside, when he chants that mantra, the result is the deity to whom he is addressing that, she has to be there to hear. To such a stage it comes to. Due to that strength of upasana inside, and that may take many, many, many years of upasana and also satugunam, so many things and involved in that, isn't it? Tapasya, in other words. So, Shabda Shastram, the sound, Shabda Shastram means the technology of the sound, not the gross technology what we worry about. We also have sound technology now, isn't it? But according to the Shabda Shastram, which is on a subtle level, how the sound carries the thoughts and the bhavam or the mood of the subtle body through the sound to you. That is the most important thing, and that is what is initiation is all about. Which is all about. So here mentions here that one Krishna says here that Krishna is inviting gopis to sound, through sound, isn't it? Through the sound, Krishna has invited the gopis. That kalam, that's what that word is, means jagau kalam vamadrisham manoharam. See, Suga Brahmarshi is glorifying the sound there. Have you noticed that? Jagau kalam vamadrisham manoharam. That kalam, jagau kalam vamadrisham manoharam. Kalam vamadrisham manoharam. Kalam, kalam to madhura aspude. In Vyagaranam, in grammar they say, kalam means madhuram, sweet, and aspude. Kalam means, so, that kalam means that sound. Now Suga Brahmarshi is talking about the sound of the flute. He is saying kalam is madhuram, it is sweet, that sound. And hearing that jagau kalam vamadrisham manoharam, That beautiful sound they heard and they are running to Krishna. Kaishoram sabhalikarodikalayan kunjeviharam hari. Krishna's age at that time is Kaishoram. Kaishoram means he is not that old. He is only about 6 or 7 years old in that age group. So, Kishoram. Krishna says here, Krishna played the flute and gopis have come up to him. And by hearing the sound of the flute, gopis had come. Kalabhada Shravanam. So, similarly, devotee also many times out of complete frustration in life, a stage comes and he says there that all the false ego has gone away from inside. All the false away has gone away from inside. And which direction he wants to go, he doesn't know. He is in that state. Devotee comes to that state, what we discussed before. That after failure in the material life, and even after failure in the spiritual life also, he started thinking that which direction I should turn now. And that is the time that that the flute, sound of the flute has to come from Krishna's side. Normally we say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. We say to everybody, isn't it? Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So that is easy to say that, isn't it? We are preachers, all preachers do, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But the person who is saying, he himself cannot chant. He is the one who is saying this to others, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But the person who is saying that, he himself is not able to chant. Why? Because his mind is absorbed in other millions of things in this world. See the problem? That he is saying to others, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But the person who is saying this, he himself is not convinced about it, what he is talking about. And he is saying to them that that he himself is not able to do it because he himself is not sure about it, that what he is saying. So it is in that case, says that then proper chanting is that if you keep chanting at some stage, the chanting has to take control of us. Just like Krishna's flute is taking, the sound of the flute is taking control of the gopis. Similar way, Krishna's holy name has to take control of us. That is the way it should happen. And in that case, there will be no more problem to chant the holy name. It will not be difficult at all after that to chant the holy name. Evam bhudamanunyadana vasutha nishyanda sandohanam tudrubam parajidrasayanamayam chedoharam shrnvadam sadya prerayate madhim madayade romanjayatyangagaihi vyasenjatya vishida bashpa visarei anandamuchodbhavehi. In the a devotee is saying to Krishna, evam bhudamanunyadana vasutha nishyanda sandohanam. By chanting the holy name, what happens? He is explaining there that nishyanda sandohanam tudrupam. As you keep on chanting, at some stage Krishna comes inside and he sits there and he becomes a part of the chanting process. He becomes and sits there and becomes a part of the chanting. All this happens at a very, very latest phase in chanting process. That when one becomes completely tired in material life, tired in spiritual life, and when he is looking for direction at that point, evam bhudamanunyadana vasutha nishyanda sandohanam tudrubam parajidrasayanamayam chedoharam shrinvadam. At that point, chedoharam shrinvadam. When the chanting goes on without being, it's not happening on your own, it's happening inside. Chedoharam shrinvadam sadya prerayade madhim madayade. Then, in the form of sound, Krishna has to come and manifest inside us in the form of the sound. In the form of the sound, it has to happen. So, when that happens, that is very irresistible. Irresistible it is. So gopis are saying here to Krishna that when we hear the sound of the flute, from that day onwards, that the chanting, all that they were chanting before, Krishna's holy name, they were chanting. They were absorbed in Krishna to such an extent. But as soon as they heard the sound of the flute, they could experience immediately the perfection of their chanting the holy name. In other words, if you look, you will see in the Bhagavatam how gopis spend their time. Gopis were not chanting the holy name just like the way we do as a sadhana as such. But what happened to gopis were, because of their association with Krishna and remembrance of Krishna, holy name has come to them. And they were always chanting Krishna's holy names in different holy names. Govinda Damodara Madhavedi, Govinda Damodara Madhava Shamsundara. All these are different names which they were chanting at different times according to the mood what they were in. But all the time thoughts were absorbed in Krishna. While they were engaged in all their activities in Vrindavanam, even though they were engaged in all the activities, they were chanting the holy name, remembering Krishna, and in a natural way, the holy names manifested in their heart. But the result of all that chanting has eventually developed in this way, that when they heard the sound of the flute, they are saying there that this holy name has led us to this hearing of the Krishna's sound of the flute. So here, what we have to see here is that then some questions came up from the king at that time. Because these things were spoken in the Bhagavatam, that as soon as this holy name has happened, that holy name has taken them, taken to the form, Krishna's form, that where they have come, they have forgotten about themselves. And they have forgotten about the name also. In other words, suppose the gopis have lost their name, their own name and their own form. In other words, they have completely broken away, disconnected themselves from this world, in other words. So they have given up everything, they have lost their identity as a gopi, they don't identify anymore with the particular family, which means that no connection with the children, parents, husband, all that relationships, they have broken. Completely broken. Their own identity, they have lost it, and now they have completely been captured by Krishna's form in that beauty. So it is in that state, in the night, they are running, coming down to Krishna. So those who could not come, they stayed at home, meditated on that. The meditation happened to them in a natural way, and they escaped from there. So when gopis ran and came up to Krishna like this, Parikshit had a question to So Brahmarshi, he is asking some questions there. You will see in the next words. And that is a very important question. Although, in the Katha form, these questions are spoken in one way. In the Upanishad background, it has a little more deeper meaning. That is what I am saying. That when we study all these chapters, if you have no connection with the Upanishads, it will remain as a story. But if you start taking Upanishads background, I mentioned this before also, those who have studied Vedam, Upanishads, Brahma Sutram and all other literature, when they come to Bhagavatam, they understand Bhagavatam in a little different understanding, different perspective. But those of us who are going to Srimad Bhagavatam direct, without that background, we find it in a different way. We will end up into different situations, isn't it? Because they can see when they read these verses, what is Sukadeva Goswami trying to say? Because Sukadeva Goswami himself is a man of Upanishads knowledge, isn't it? So that is coming through these verses to him. So here, these questions, Rajavacha, you will see that question also is in the same way. Through Parikshit, Vedavyasa Maharshi is putting this through. Rajavacha is saying that, Rajavacham, what is Krishnam viduparam kandam nadu brahmadaya muni guna pravaho paramam tasam gunadhyam katham. Parikshit is asking this question. That is why interesting. We think that Parikshit is not very educated. You think, oh, he was just a king, isn't it? Completely ignorant person. No, he's not. If you see that verse, it shows that how much Parikshit is conscious of spiritual life. He was the great fortune that his spiritual life started with Krishna himself directly in the womb, isn't it? So here he says that കൃഷ്ണം വിദുപരം കാന്തം നദുബ്രഹ്മദയാ മുനി ഗുണപ്രവാഹോ പരമം താസാം ഗുണധിയാം കഥം
സേസ് ഹിയർ ദാറ്റ് മൈൻഡ് നോർമലി ദീസ് ഗോപീസ് ദ ഹാവ് എ മൈൻഡ് ഇസ് ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് മൈൻഡ് ഈസ് മെയ്ഡ് ഓഫ് വാട്ട് ത്രീ മോഡ്സ് ഓഫ് മെറ്റീരിയൽ നേച്ചർ ഗുഡ്നെസ് പാഷൻ ആൻഡ് ഇഗ്നോറൻസ് സ്വത്വം രജസ് ആൻഡ് തമസ് And in their mind, these gopis were attached to Krishna, and they thought about Krishna as their as their husband. They wanted to Krishna as their husband and their lover. This was their relationship with Krishna. See what an intelligent question he is asking. We won't ask these questions. We will ask which year Bhagavatam was written. Where was the Bhagavatam written? This is more important for us to verify whether it is right or wrong. But Parishad is not asking such questions. Parishad's question is that Sattva Rajas Tamas, three modes of material nature, is there in the mind, and there they have attracted to Krishna as in their as the husband, as their lover. But that's how they thought about Krishna. How come they got attached to Krishna in this way? This is the question. Because if you are in the Gunapravaham, Gunapravaham means the three modes of material nature is flowing in this world all the time. It's a flow. It's a flow. Three modes of material nature is a flow here. We pick up here and there whichever modes we want in that flow. Flow is going on all the time, three modes of material nature. Everything in this creation is three modes, is under three modes. Is it not? So according to our vasanas inside, according to our vasana, our modes, we will also get attracted to different modes in this world. That is called guna pravaham. You will see this word guna pravaham in the Bhagavatam in many places. When Chitrakedu, in the sixth canto, when Chitrakedu first time, when Angiras and Narada Maharshi came to them to instruct about the transcendental knowledge, give mantra diksha to him, Chitrakedu was not interested. He wanted his child, he was crying all the time. And okay, they gave him this benediction that you chant this and you will have the mantra and all that. And then Chitrakedu had they performed one, what is called as the sacrifice, isn't it? Putragamishti, sacrifice they perform. The story is very much like Ramayanam that way. Like Putragamishti was performed, and the payasam, what was the khavis that came from there, was handed over to Kausalya. In Ramayanam it's like that, isn't it? To Kausalya, Kaikeyi and Sumitra, and then from them the children were born, Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata and Shatrughna. Similarly, here, after the sacrifice, from the, and so they handed over the havisa from there to Kridadyudi, that is Chitrakedu's wife, and a son was born. But Angiras gave these blessings to him: you will have greatest happiness from this child, and you will have the greatest distress also from him. Chitrakedu says, doesn't matter, I'll have some happiness, won't I? Distress is okay, we'll see when it comes. Just like us. we also see that sukham dukham, happiness and distress, we are attached to that sukham side. Dukham we say, when it comes we will see. That's why we are all sitting here. That when the ambulance comes to take us to the Golders Green, we are not worried. We are right now worried the little happiness what we can get here. That's what matters to us now. So that is how we are. That's the nature of the jiva. Sukha dukham, that duality, dvandvam, how it binds us like that. Intelligent person should not be attracted either by happiness or by distress. That is the right situation. Because he knows that comes in the nature, it goes. That is proper understanding. But here you can see with Chitrakedu what happened. He says, I will have a son, won't I? He says, yes, you will have. Rest of the things you will see. At that time, when anything distress comes, when that comes, we will deal with it at that time. So the son was born and the son died. You know that story. In Chitrakedu's case, the son died. When the son died, the two came together again. Who? Narada Maharshi and Angiras. They comes back again. They wanted to save this king somehow. He won't listen.
no matter what you tell him, he won't listen. And at that point, Narada Maharshi played a trick on Chitrakedu. What did he do? This jiva who left that son's body, it's growing to the next body. It's going to the next body. Narada Maharshi, through his power of mantra, told the jiva to come back here again. And told the jiva to speak to his father. So, the words that jiva spoke, if you read in the Bhagavatam, you will see, who is my father, he says. In so many lifetimes, I had so many fathers. And I was also father for so many others. So, which is the father you are talking about? Jiva is asking this question. At that time, you will see, this father, mother, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, or grandfather, grandmother, all these relationships, it's all happening in the flow of the modes of nature, three modes of material nature. There you will see this word, guna pravaham, used. Guna pravaham etasmin. Jiva is saying to Chitrakedu that in this flow of the three modes of material nature, I've got so many different bodies. And in different bodies, I had different parents, father, mother. Which father and mother are you referring to now? Here, my food is finished now. With this father and mother, my food is over. I have to go to the next. They are waiting there. The next one is waiting there. I am going there now. The jiva is saying to Chitrakedu. When the jiva said that, Chitrakedu understood. He was a right foolish person. That he was developing this attachment towards this jiva and suffering from that, thinking that, oh, my son had left me. It opened his eyes, in other words. Chitrakedu's eyes were opened. So there also you will see this word, gunapravaham. And that is the same thing he Parikshit is saying here. Krishnam miduparam kantam nadu brahmadayamuni gunapravaho paramam tasam gunadhyam kathaha. That gunapravaho paramam tasam gunadhyo katha. This gunapravaham, the flow of three modes of nature, is there all the time. Is there all the time. And they are, gopis are absorbed in that gunapravaham, isn't it? They are under modes, three modes of material nature. And how did they escape from that? By hearing, how did they get to hear this flute and escape from that influence of the three modes of material nature? You see, gopis are seeing Krishna from a completely different level. In a liberated state, they are seeing Krishna now. Unaffected by the sinful activity, pious activities, everything that had left them. And they have come to see Krishna completely on such transcendental position. That sound of the flute has attracted them and they have gone there. So, how can they escape from the three modes of material nature so easily? That was the question from Parikshit to him. Sudeva Goswami answers that in the 14th verse. If you see, Shri Shuka Uvacham Uktam Purastare Datte Chaitya Siddhim Yadha Gadaham Dushanna Vikrishi Kesham Kimudha Adhokshaja Priyaham Uktam Purastare Datte Chaitya Siddhim Yadha Gadaham Dushanna Vikrishi Kesham Kimudadhokshaja priyaha Nranam Nishreya Sarthaya Vyaktir Bhagavado Nrupah Avyaya Sapramayasya Nurgunasya Gunalmanam Kamam Krodham Hayam Sneham Aikyam Saukhadamevacham Nityam Haro Vidhadhado Yandi Tanmayadam Hite. That is the answer for that. Shuka Brahmarshi's answer to Parikshit. For that question. Question is very interesting. Normally, gopis are under the three modes of material nature. Their mind is absorbed to Krishna as a lover and as a husband. That's their attraction, that which is completely material, isn't it? Completely material it is. It's not spiritual. Completely on a material platform, they have a relationship with Krishna. How come they got attracted, who are under three modes of material nature, how they got attracted to Krishna in this way, on a spiritual plane, how this relationship developed? This was the question from Parikshit. In answer to that, he says here, then Parikshit says there, sorry, Shiva Brahmarshi says there, that Krishna, although he has no modes of material nature, he is beyond the three modes of material nature. Nirgunam he is, isn't it? Nirgunam means Three modes of material nature cannot touch him. Goodness, passion and ignorance does not exist in him, in Krishna. Although aprameyam, aprameyam means he cannot be measured by anything. Says here, avyayasyal aprameyasya nirgunasya yad gunalmana. He is nirgunasya, he is aprameyam, and he is beyond the three modes. Avyayasya aprameyasya nirgunasya gunalmana, he says. Then he, Krishna, who is beyond the three modes of material nature and who cannot be measured by anything, he comes to this world. That when devotee here, when some devotees here in this world, when he wants to escape from here, and after putting a lot of effort in this world, and ultimately he becomes so desperate that he wants to go away from here to the spiritual world or get liberated from here, or he wants to give up all his connections with this world and feeling so frustrated within himself that he could not experience Krishna up to that point. And when he is struggling like that, Krishna inside him, inside that person, which is known as Antaryami, isn't it? Antaryami is Krishna inside. He takes the form and manifests outside. In the Bhagavatam, how it mentions is, Svecho Partha Prithak Vapu. Svecho Partha Prithak Vapu. That means, Krishna is monitoring our mind. When we feel very desperate in life, that means materially we are impoverished, completely finished. Spiritually also you have become hopeless in everything. You feel hopeless state and still you are looking for some help from a higher source. That higher source is inside here, Antaryami, Krishna inside. So at that point, when you are in that state, Krishna as Antaryami from inside makes a decision to appear in front of you and to give you the guidance at that time. That is what is called Svecho Partha Prithak Vabhu. At that time, he takes a form and comes to you. And that is what is called a spiritual master. That is what the spiritual master means. So, Svecho Partha Prithak Vabhu. And he comes and he attracts you towards Krishna. In his own way, in his own style, he does that. So, if it is like that, whatever one has, kamam, krodham, sauhradam, bhayam, few things he mentions there, isn't it? Kamam, krodham, bhayam, sneham, aikyam, sauhradam, evacha, nityam, harau, vidhatatau, yandidanmayatam, hite. So, when that situation happens, Svechobhata Pratak Vabhu, that is the word. Svechobhata Pratak Vabhu. What does that? Svecha means on his own accord, Krishna comes. On his own accord, Krishna comes. Normally we think Krishna has only 10 major incarnations, isn't it? Krishna is also, in Bhagavatam, there is another place, there is 24 incarnations spoken. But Krishna's incarnations are unlimited. Spiritual master is actually an incarnation of Krishna. He's actually, in a sense, that Svechopatha Pratak Vabhu. That's what it is. That he has accepted that form, Pratak Vabhu, that form, Vabhu is body, but it has come on his own accord. He's decided inside, Antaryami decided inside, this person is ready for receiving the proper instructions. So I have to go and instruct him from outside, and he comes from outside. He takes a form outside and comes to him to instruct him, and that is the spiritual master. You see how that relationship is between the spiritual master and the disciple, everything. These things cannot be, should not be minimized, and it should not be spoken in a light-hearted way. It's not an institutional thing. This is what I am saying. It cannot work that way. If we put our hands into it and make a mess of everything, what can be done? What can you do? Bhagavatam is telling us like this, Svechobhata Pratak Vabhu, that spiritual master has to come and we should have the patience to wait till that happens. The reason why spiritual master has not come, the reason is that we are not ready. That's what it is. That is the reason. As I mentioned before, that readiness happens when we are exhausted with this world, when we are exhausted even in spiritual life after performing a lot of sadhana and feeling the helplessness and no direction. When you don't feel that direction, it is at that time that Krishna from inside Antaryami, he knows at that time when to come to us. And he will come and he will instruct us at that point. This is the Shastram. This is the Shastric version of the Guru-Shishya relationship. Other things, what's happening in the world, that's another thing. That we don't have to worry about, let it continue that way. But this is the Shastram is saying to us, this is how it works. That there's a lot of things has to happen in inside. It's not that something I can choose on the spot like that, because I got the book or somebody read something to me or somebody told me something, it will happen. It won't happen like that. So here he mentions here, Sudev Brahmarshi, his answer to that, to go about the gopis, he's saying to in relationship with this question, that how come under the three modes of material nature the gopis were there, how come they got attracted, they got come to this transcendental platform? Because when gopis heard the sound of the flute, they have lost their identity with the body, identity with the mind, identity with the family, and all other relatives, everything, and completely absorbed in the soul, in Krishna, and they were able to go. It was not due to lust. It was not due to any other reason that they went. Why? Because at that point, as soon as they heard the sound of the flute, the names, holy names they have chanted before, the benefit of all that has manifested in this way to them, that Krishna invited them through the sound of the flute. And as soon as they heard the sound of the flute, all bodily identity dropped with the mind, intelligence, everything. And they become got elevated to that state that they were able to come to Krishna very freely without any reservation. Nothing could stop them at that point. Family could not stop them. Bodily relationships could not stop them. Their own children, their karma could not stop them. Their sinful reactions, pious activities, all that has been wiped out. So it is at that point that they have come to Krishna. They have come to Krishna. So that is why he says there, then he is explaining, Subramashi is saying there, that if a person in under any of the modes, under any of the influences, whether through kamam, gopis had kamam, Shishupala had hate, Kamsa had fear, isn't it? Kamam, krodham, bhayam, sneham, four things. Pandavas had love for Krishna, isn't it? Srinarada Maharshi says we had bhakti towards him. It does not matter. Gopya kama bhayal kamsa dvesha chaidyadayo nrupam sambandho vrishnaya snehal yuyam bhaktya vayam vibhom. Shri Brahmarshi is saying there, what he said in the seventh canto, he's repeating there, that it does not matter if you have any of these emotions inside. If it is towards Krishna, you will escape. If it is towards Krishna, you will escape. So, somehow or other, if you make a relationship with Krishna through any of these, all of them will get liberated. All this was spoken in the seventh canto. If you remember, that when in the Rajasuyam sacrifice, Yudhishthira Maharaj was asking this question, how Shishupala got liberated, how Hiranyakashipu got liberated. I have done so much, I am still here. Why does it mean? Why is it like this? He is asking that question, isn't it? And in the Rajasuyam sacrifice, Markandeya Maharshi came to talk about Ramayanam story. After Markandeya Maharshi finished, the story of Ramachandra, he heard from Markandeya. And Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to hear, and he had this question about, he said, something is disturbing me very much, he said. And his question was this, to Narada Maharshi. Krishna and Arjuna was also there in that assembly in Rajasuyam. And there the question came up that how is that that all these great persons, they come and get liberated from here and goes away. This happened particularly in Rajasuyam when Shishupala escaped. Remember, Shishupala was killed by Krishna. And Shishupala goes and joins Krishna's body. Is it not? You know that. The photo is the picture they have drawn in the Bhagavatam. And it's there in the Bhagavatam also. Shishupala goes and joins Krishna's body. And Yudhishthira is getting a little bit concerned. What has Shishupala done all his life except to abuse Krishna? That's all he has done in his life. Nothing else. He abused to such an extent. He says to Sahadeva, I don't want to see him, he says. If I see him, my blood pressure will go up, he says. Such an extent the hate inside him. Yeah. And Sahadeva had to struggle very hard to invite him, to bring him to Rajasuyam. He had to build a separate house there. And Shishupala told Sahadeva that Sahadeva is the one who brought him there. He says to him that if he is coming this way, then let me know. I'll close all the windows. So I don't have to see him anymore. To that extent, he could not bear seeing Krishna, Shishupala. And here is Dharmaputra, Yudhishthira Maharaj, have done so much to please Krishna, including this Rajasuyam he has done. Rajasuyam is a big sacrifice, isn't it? You remember Rajasuyam? 17 months and 17 days it lasted. And if you read the description of Rajasuyam, nowhere has a thing has happened like that, the way Rajasuyam has happened. The amount of gold, the amount of money that was spent, the feast they had, the personalities who have attended, people are coming from the heavenly planets who to attend. All the great sages, they were there. And all the kings of the planet were in the Rajasuyam. So Rajasuyam was a very big thing. Not ordinary people can do a Rajasuyam. Yudhishthira Maharaj could do Rajasuyam only because of Krishna, Krishna's mercy. By doing all that, Rajasuyam, he was thinking, Krishna must be pleased with me now. But when he saw Shishupala going back to Krishna and he is still sitting there, he got a little doubt and he asked this question. Why is it like this, he said. And that time, Narada Maharshi told Yudhishthira Maharaj that, Yudhishthira, it is like this. Bhakti is important, but more important than that, you have to have some relationship with Krishna. In some form, doesn't matter which form. Either you hate him, or you love him, or you be frightened of him, doesn't matter. Or you have lust for him, like the gopis had. They are all different emotions, isn't it? So, through one of these emotions, have to have some relationship with him. But our problem is we have no relationship. That is the problem. So here he says here, Gopyakamad bhayat kamsam deshya chaityadayo nirva sambandham krishnaya snehad yuyam bhaktya vayam vibho. There he has already answered this question. And here now, again Parishad has brought up that discussion. Again he is asking this question. So, he mentions there, that Hiranyakshan Hiranyakashipu, all those personalities are far, far higher than us. By all means, isn't it? They are very higher than us. You see, when Hiranyakashipu wanted to perform his penances, you see how he did that? Can we do what he did? We cannot do that, can we? You see how he sat there and Brahma, because of his strength of the penances, the prana inside has broken here and it started flowing towards the heavenly planets. And the demigod started feeling the pressure there because of the control of the air from inside here. That is how powerful he was, Hiranyakashipu. How he controlled his pens. And what happened? When Brahma started feeling, because Brahma is on the highest planet, isn't it? When he started feeling the heat from the tapasya or penances of Hiranyakashipu here, he started inquiring what's going on. And then he came to know that this Hiranyakashipu is doing all these things here. Then he brings demigods that come and complain to Brahma what Hiranyakashipu is up to. And then they all decided to come together. And Brahma comes there to see Hiranyakashipu. So when he came to see Hiranyakashipu, what did he say to Hiranyakashipu? Never in the past anybody has performed penances like you. Nor in the future will anyone do like the way you did. Such a recognition from Brahma, that too, to Hiranyakashipu. And he took his kamandalu water pot. Brahma had a water pot and there is some water in that. But when he looked at Hiranyakashipu, he couldn't see very much. Just a bag of bones. There is no flesh, nothing. Practically the blood circulation, everything has more or less stopped. No food for many, many months he hasn't eaten anything. And around, surrounding him completely was this nest of the ants. You know, in the forest you will notice sometimes, if you go deep forest, you will see the ants' nest, which is made of earth in a higher level. He has been covered by that. In Puranam, Valmigam it is called. That's how the word Valmigi came. Valmigi also had the same thing. So he was completely covered in that, and only these eyes you could see outside, our Hiranyakashipu's two eyes. That means he has sat there for such a long time, not even knowing about his own body. To that extent he was focused in his penances, austerities. So Brahma takes a little bit of water and sprinkles on that body. On that body. Seeing, and he says to him, to Hiranyakashipu, Brahma knows who Hiranyakashipu is. He says to him, what you have done, nobody could do it so far. Nobody will be able to do it in the future. Na karishyanti chapare, he says there. Nobody has done so far. Nobody will be able to do it in the future. Such a certification from Brahma. And he sprinkled this water on Hiranyakashipu. And from there he comes out from inside that. As soon as this water has fallen on his body, Vajra Samhanano Yuva, Bhagavadam says, a person who looks like a diamond color and strength like diamond, a personality came out from inside, and that was Hiranyakashipu. He looked as though, appeared as though, so beautiful he was, his color, the youth, the, what you say now, charisma, you say, all what he had at that time. Vajra Samhanano Yuva, Bhagavadam, Shukha Brahmarshi says about him. Vajram, Vajram means diamond, looks like a diamond, that he comes out from there, and seeing that, even Brahma got a shock seeing that personality, Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha and all that, they are not ordinary people. Same thing in Hiranyaksha also you will see. Krishna says, I will never forget you, he says. You know when he said that? When he came as Vamanamurti. When Vamanamurti and there was a meeting, Vamanamurti and Mahabali. So Mahabali praised Vamanamurti a lot. And Vamanamurti praised Mahabali also. To keep, feel, Mahabali is a asura, isn't it? So Mahabali likes being glorified. So Vamanamurti is praising, you know the punch you gave it to me at that time when, from Hiranyaksha, I still have not forgotten, he says. You punched me on my chest. That has happened millions of years before that, in the Hiranyaksha appearance. Hiranyaksha and Boar incarnation, Varaha, they fought each other, isn't it? When they fought each other, Hiranyaksha punched on Varaha's chest. The power of the punch was such that Vamanamurti is saying to Mahabali, I have still not forgotten that. What I had, because, and that Hiranyaksha belongs to your family. To put Mahabali up, Krishna is saying all these things, to elevate, making him feeling elevated. Oh, my family background is such. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, is all belongs to my family, Mahabali is saying. In fact, Krishna do recognize that. So similarly here also, you can see that Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, they are all great, great personalities. That, but most of us think that they are like a villain in the cinema or something like that. Lot of people. And we make pictures also, like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu like that. That something like a villain, or a hero and a villain like thing. So, but, if you see Hiranyakashipu's glorification of truth, Krishna, you see that in the Bhagavadam, you will understand that they are all in the samadhi state. It is unbelievable, the verses what Hiranyakashipu has spoken. You wonder that, how kind of realization has he got and how these things are happening. That explanation is there in the Bhagavadam. But as far as knowledge wise, they were not lacking anything. They had the very higher knowledge as well on Krishna. So, never to think about them as ordinary people. They had only three lifetimes they needed. They got back to their abode. We are here for 300 million years and still nothing has happened, still we are here where we are. So normally what is possible for even the devotees, even for the devotees, what is not possible, they have done it in three lifetimes. Suppose somebody tells you, okay, three lifetimes you have to come back and you will come back to the spiritual world. You won't mind that, would you? If it is three, it's okay. Three is not too bad. But, but if it is three, it's okay. But we are not talking about three now. How many more? We don't know. We don't know. That's our position. And fortunately, how many is over, that also we don't know. That is a good side of it. We don't know how many has gone and how many more, that also we don't know. In between we are here like this. So that is why there Krishna mentions there in the Bhagavatam, Sambhramba Sambhada Samadhi Yogaha Anubaddha Yogau Sambhramba Sambhada Samadhi Anubaddha Yogau. They had a special relationship with Krishna, all these personalities. That you have to see it like that. They all had a special relationship with Krishna. They have come to this world. When they come here, they have taken a special ticket that they will come back, because they didn't come here only with a guarantee they had come here. If you observe that, all of them, before they came here, they had a guarantee that they will come back after three lifetimes. That's why Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu went back, Ravana and Kumbhakarna went back, Shishupala and Dandavatra also went back. They all had a ticket. Kamsa's case is a little different. Kamsa's case was, he was already a liberated person, but something happened there and he had to come back here, in the sense that he was Kalanemi in his previous life. Vishnu has killed him and still he didn't go back. He didn't go back. So therefore he had to come back here, and Krishna decided that this lifetime it's finished, that's it. Even Kamsa is a better person than all of us. We have to respect him for that. You see, Kamsa managed to escape. After all, he got killed by Krishna, isn't it? Krishna jumped onto his chest. When Kamsavatam, if you read in the Bhagavatam, you will see, Kamsa jumped onto his chest and punched him there and sent him back to the spiritual world. Uncle, nephew, sent him back to the spiritual world. From mundane view, all may look a little awkward, but from a spiritual point of view, Kamsa is a fortunate person. Kamsa is a fortunate person. People who are fortunate, who got killed by Krishna, or in many of them in Krishna's presence, Krishna directly killed and sent them back to the spiritual world. And they are all very, very fortunate souls. Look at Jarasandha, unfortunate person. Krishna wouldn't kill him. He used Bhima to kill him. He made Bhima to kill him. So there are different situations in the Bhagavatam. You will see different personalities happens there. So important point, what Sudeva Goswami is telling us here is that any relationship, doesn't matter, must be there. Either bhakti, which is the proper relationship, or some other relationship, like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu had one relationship, Shishupala and Dandavatra had another relationship, Ravana and Kumbhakarna had another relationship, Vairam means enmity towards Krishna, they had that. So, if such a relationship, doesn't matter, he says. Similarly, gopis had a relationship with Krishna, lust relationship. Even that doesn't matter. But there must be a relationship. That's more important. If there is no relationship, that is called udasinyam, audasinada. That should not happen. That should not happen. People who are in this world, that is how we live. We will go to the temple, we will perform deity worship, we will pay our obeisances. We want only that much, nothing more than that. We don't want too much, a lot we can't take in. Krishna can stay there and I will stay here. As so, we want that gap between Krishna and us. So this is called Udasina Bhavam, Udasina. Udasina means keeping a distance from Krishna. Keeping a distance from Krishna. Some people say, better than that relationship is to go and steal in the temple. To steal in the temple. Or better than that is to remain as an atheist. To remain as an atheist. Because one day, if you are an atheist, atheist means what? You have to deny Krishna, isn't it? If you keep on denying Krishna, whole life, day and night, you become strong in that state, what will happen is you will make a relationship with Krishna in an opposite way, through hate or through fear or through anger, some form, some relationship with Krishna will happen, because after all, whole life you have denied his existence, isn't it? You see, you can't do very much in this world, in the sense that either you have to develop bhakti or you have to deny Krishna and become an atheist. But atheist will become more powerful very quickly, because he is constant, his strength of that bhavam or mood inside is very strong. So they also belong to that sambhrambha sambhrada samadhi yogam. And their samadhi state will be much more powerful, and they will get also liberated, because what happens is they can never forget Krishna. You see, those who are denying Krishna, they can never forget Krishna, isn't it? You look at the atheists, what they do? Atheists have to always find arguments to deny Krishna, isn't it? To deny Krishna, they have to always find new arguments. So all the time, they are absorbed in that thought of finding out new or fresh arguments to deny Krishna. But gopis have come to him, to Krishna, with a particular emotions. And because they have offered everything to Krishna, they have fallen in that. Therefore, no matter what relationship you have with Krishna, if you go to Krishna, you will fall into that pit. Krishna is a pit. He's addressed as a pit. You will fall into that pit. That is why in the thousand names of Vishnu, one of the names given to Krishna is Mahagartham. Mahagartham Mahaprabhu. There's two names there. One is Mahagartham. Mahagartham means bottomless pit. If you go to Krishna, you will fall into that pit. You will never be able to come out from there. This is why another name given to him is Mahagartham. Means it's a pit where you go, you will never come back again. You get attracted to Krishna in any way, or you become little bit Krishna conscious, you will never be able to go back from there. Will never be able to go back from there. In many cases, this is very famous. Instances have happened. Many great jnanis also, this thing happens. This thing happens. All mahatmas, this is common thing, what happens to them. So, there was once it so happened that in Trivanamurai, in Ramanashramam, there was one big professor. He came to visit the ashramam and to see Ramana Maharshi at that time, many years ago. And when he came there, then I'll go on my own, he said. So others told him that don't go on your own, take your family with you. Let them also go, because if you go there and get caught in this attraction of the Maharshi's ring or Maharshi's association, it is possible that you may not come back again. Sometimes it happens like that, isn't it? You come and come to the temple or get attracted to Krishna consciousness, then you don't go back home anymore. You become a part of the temple in that way. So Maharshi also is also known as Mahagartham. So they said to him like that. They told him, take somebody with you. So just like that, when we Krishna is also like that. If we get attracted to Krishna, some way, some form, kamam, krodham, bhayam, sneham, doesn't matter. If you have gone and put all of your feelings towards Krishna, eventually you will become completely diluted in that. So that is what? Kamam, krodham, bhayam, sneham, aikyam, saukhridam, evacha, nityam, harau, vithatato, yandidan, mayadam, hite, yandidan, mayadam, hite. Say that. So, that is what has happened to gopis here. So, gopis have ran towards Krishna and they arrived there forgetting everything else. They have never thought about anything and they never arranged everything and they have given up everything. That's what has happened. This is practically like a sannyasa ashram, isn't it? Sannyasis are supposed to do that. Give up all connections with this world and take complete shelter of Krishna. That is sannyasa means. And gopis, this is what has happened to them, isn't it? Gopis, what has happened to them? So here, tadrishtvam na chaivam vismaya karyo bhavada bhagavatyaje yogeshareshwari krishne Yadayetad vimuchyateim. You see what Sukadeva Goswami is saying there, 16th verse. Na chaivam vismaya karyo bhavada bhagavatya je yogeshwareshwara krishne yadayetad vimuchyateim. Then Krishna is what? Yogeshwara. Yogeshwareshwara. That is how it's addressed there, isn't it? Yogeshwareshwara. Bhavata Bhagavatya Jai. One who has no birth. Krishna has no birth. And Krishna is the Yogeshwareshwara. Controller of all yogis. In other words, and yoga personified in everything. And without any thoughts, this whole creation, all living entities, moving and unmoving, ultimately they come back to him for liberation. It happens to them through him. So, and they experience that, yatra edad vimuchyade, yogeshwareshwara krishne yatra edad vimuchyade, that all the living entities ultimately get liberated through Krishna. Only Krishna is the person who liberates them. Tadrishtu antigamayata bhagavan prajayoshidaha avadvadvadam shreshta avadvadvadam shreshto vajaveshair vimohayan. So, it was at that point that this is something very important to understand. Here, he says here that what has happened to gopis, how the gopis approached Krishna. That is the state for receiving transcendental knowledge, transcendental realization. In other words, gopis had lost all connection with the world. Gopis had lost all interest in this world. They have given up all their karma in this world. They have lost all their pious activities, sinful activities, everything. In other words, they were purified to a very higher level. Plus, in their consciousness earlier, they had the attachment for Krishna. So these two things together, they got attracted to Krishna, and when they went to Krishna, their state of consciousness was very pure. Very, very pure, wasn't it? Because no karma vasana inside. Because they have given up karma completely there. No attraction for karma anymore. Karma has left them. Pious activities, sinful activities, their reactions have also gone. Bodily identification and relationship with the family members, everything, they gave it up without any problem. They gave it up. And they have come here. And here, Krishna is going to talk to them certain things. Great personalities are also like that. Sometimes you will see, sometimes, quite often this happens, people come with a little bit of renunciation inside. Not a lot. Little bit of renunciation inside. They'll go to these great personalities. And for example, suppose sometimes something happened at home. You didn't get on very well with the parents. You got upset with them or they got upset with you and you decided to leave home. That time you feel so frustrated that you go to some ashram and go and see some Mahatma and say to him, look, I want to join the ashram and give me initiation, I want to stay in the ashram. So, or sometimes husband had a fight with the wife and says to the wife, I'm going, I'm not coming back anymore, and go to some ashram and stay there. In this way, these things normally happens in life with many people. But learned people who are highly advanced in spiritual life, if they are Mahatmas like that, they won't give them initiation straight away. Because they know that it's only a temporary thing that has happened in their life. They will tell them, please go home and try to live there. And so they will send them back. Because if you don't send them back and if you give them initiation or anything and ask them to stay, they know very well it may last only for a week or 10 days. After that, he will find some problem there in the ashram and he will go. He will leave again. So intelligent people, intelligent acharyas or great personalities, they will test the person before they give any spiritual instructions. That is the system. They will test the person before they give any spiritual instructions, because otherwise they know it won't last very long. It won't last
very long. And that is why from now on you will see Krishna is discouraging them to, encouraging them to go back to their home to test how far they are detached from the home. Krishna won't accept easily like that anybody. Krishna wants to make sure that we are properly pakkvam. Pakkvam means matured in our spiritual desire and spiritual realizations. So, so some people will go very on their own. I mean, there's a story about that. Once it so happened that one man at home, he always threatened his wife, "I'll take sannyas now and go," he'll say. When the sabji is cooked, if there is a salt is a little bit less or a little bit more, he'll get upset. He'll say, "I'm taking sannyas," he will say. This type of people. There are people who take sannyas like that also. That sannyasam won't last very long. That sannyasam won't last very long. So every time he used to frighten her like this, "I'm taking sannyas, I'm taking sannyas," everything. Every time. So every time when that happens, we are talking about Vedic times, not today. Eh? So every time this happens, the wife will come, pay her obeisances to the husband and request him not to go and make apologize for the mistake in the service, what she has done. All those things used to happen. So and make sure asking for forgiveness. So this carried on many times. It happened. He will threaten her with sannyasam and she will pay obeisances and apologize at the end. So one day, this carried on for a long time, and she said to her friend next door, neighbor, somebody, "My husband is saying like this all the time." So then that lady, the next door, she was a little bit intelligent. She told her, "Don't worry about it. Next time when he says that, you tell him, please go and see what happens," he said. "Please go, tell him that, let him go and see what happens." People who say like that, they will never take sannyas, she said. They only talk like this, but they will never do it. They will never take sannyas, they will never do it, he said. So you don't have to worry, you say like that to them. So, so in the same thing, next time when the same thing happened, she in a very polite way, she told him like this, "Please go, if you have to go. What can I say? I can't stop you because you're going to take sannyas. How can I stop you? It's not proper for me." She put encouraged it in that way. Told her that it's not proper for me because you are going for a higher purpose to realize the truth. How can I stop you from taking sannyas? He says to her. So, and he didn't know what to say. He never thought that she's going to say like this. But now he can't do anything because he already told. Otherwise he will not be very, you know, she will treat him in a bad way. That's so what he decided that let me go now. So he left home. He left home, went away. And then we stayed in some forest where the cows were grazing. He sat there. And he was thinking what to do now. I've made this and she has answered like this. Now what am I supposed to do? So by chance he got an idea. The cow from the house came there. You know, it was grazing everywhere. From his own house, it has come to that. So when he saw the cow, he held on to the tail. And the cow started going back to the house and he came with the cow back to the house again. So she asked him, "What happened?" He says, "By now he was feeling hungry. He was starving. So he had to come home. He wanted something to eat." And he says to her that, "The cow is not leaving me. What can I do?" That was his answer. That was his answer. So similarly, so in fact, vairagyam has to happen. Vairagyam one has to feel. Only then that sannyasam will be perfect. Otherwise what will happen, you will see all what is happening now. Without proper vairagyam, if you take the sannyasam, you will see what's happening now, you will see all that thing happening. Everything will happen in that way. So, so vairagya vasana, that vasana is there, that, but it is better to have some vairagyam. But vairagyam is necessary, which will only happen if you experience sufficient distress in this life and experience that impact of that distress in every cell in this body and you become mature that way. And that is what that proper vairagyam Krishna is talking about. in the Shukha Brahmarshi is talking about in the Bhagavatam. So we'll stop there now, continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.